This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
One of the oldest, if not the oldest. And now it's midnight, and it's time to say this is Radio Unnamable. My name is Bob Fast. Good morning, Cabal. That's Bill Prop over there, Brad Burgess, Judith Molina. Someone who...
Lori Summer.
And some two other people who came in whose names I don't yet know.
Jay Dobkin.
And Celeste Moratti.
Yes. You probably know me better as Mayor Vishner's cousin.
Oh, yes.
That's how we've encountered in our previous incarnations.
More of that later. I'm happy to have you here. And I'd like to know a little bit about this detective story based on the genre noir that we came to love in the movies. Judith?
Anne Waldman wrote a play based on this genre noir about six people. But I always like to have a lot of people on the stage. So I added to that Act 25, our ensemble of 25 anarchists, mm-hmm. who urge the audience to do no harm and commit other unspeakable acts of that sort. And play out the detective story on the one hand and constantly accelerating choice-making of the audience from when they come in and they don't quite know which direction to look in because people are behind them and in front of them and moving all around them. And that's the first of the choices. And it accelerates until we draw them in that, in effect, they're showing us what to do. And we draw everybody together in an ensemble that counters the criminality of the five so-called leading actors by becoming people more potent than any of the leading actors, drowning them out, as it were, and allowing the audience to join us in a free-flow action which can be anything that they decide it should be.
I'm trying to visualize that.
Yeah, we basically have a new cast every night.
And I'm trying to think. Well, that is an aspect of the living theater that I am familiar with. I remember the wonderful, wonderful evenings at the Brooklyn Academy of Music where the audience would take their clothes off and go up on the stage and join you. Sometimes it was like Tim Tyler running away with the circus. I know a couple of people whose lives were changed and who joined the living theater in those performances. I guess that's something that's happened to you many times over
the years.
Mm-hmm. Anybody here whose life has not been changed by the living theater? No hands went up for the record.
Right. It's impossible to not be changed.
I've got a daughter because of the living theater. But that's...
So a new life to change the world because of the living theater.
Well, before we went on the air, I spoke to Judith about the performance of hers that I saw in a movie where I think you were with Bart Heyman, right?
Yes. Yes, also. I was with Bart Heyman and... Robert De Niro and Robin Williams. It was quite a cast. And Dr. Gordon, a lot of wonderful people, all coming back to life in 1968
there was
from a long sleep.
There were people who had been confined to a mental institution as just non-functioning...
vegetative state is the term.
I hesitate to use that with so many vegetarians in the room. But there were people who could not make contact with other people. And there's a new technique that has sadly temporary effect of returning them to full consciousness. And they have these, like, heartbreaking awakenings. And you pointed out when you woke up, the character that you played was much older than the 15 that you remembered being.
Yes.
And
she thought she was a very attractive little girl, and she didn't understand why this handsome young doctor didn't care about her, because she was 60 years old. But it was really the whole movie, the whole story is a parable about 1968, which is when it takes place, and when it in fact took place in the life of Dr. Sachs, who was present.
Oliver Sachs.
Oliver Sachs was present at all the performances, at all the rehearsal. He, in a way, directed us, though he was certainly not the director. He was.
Well, I must say, Judith, that you just reminded me of something that was the least convincing part of the movie.
Which was?
That he wasn't interested in you.
Actually, we're very good friends. Actually, we're very good friends. But the story is that. The story is about the imbalance of someone who's old and thinks they're young, and someone who's gone through conventional aging process, and as an aging person, of course, I find this very moving, because I'm an aging person that is surrounded by a team of young people, some of whom are here today, and who inspire me to think I'm one of them.
Excuse me. She's inspiring us because she's a firecracker. It's like she does more and works harder than a lot of young people that I know. The hours of work. So this is not an aging person. Maybe of years that she is here on the planet, by no means are you and appear in any sense to be an aging person.
And I'm very impressed by your self-control, because we've been like 8 minutes on the air already, and you've managed to refrain from any of those 7 forbidden words, and we know that that's not usual for you to get through 8 minutes without making some filthy joke or something. So.
Is that true? I remember nothing of this. Well, actually, there were some... in the play that we did together, there was a rhyme, and I always thought that you created it for Rothenberg, where you sang about riding a musical on riding a motorcycle on the Great Wall of China, with the obvious rhyme.
I don't remember that, but I'm sure it's
people,
true if you remember it.
People mentioned it to me at the time, and I allowed as how I thought it was pretty sharp. Anyway, I'm glad to have you here. I hesitate to hear what you think of 2010, although I understand there's a suitcase full of future seeds in the play.
Right.
That has some significance.
Right. There are two suitcases, and one contains the seeds of hope for the future, and the other one contains a potentially a destructive weapon. And we neutralize everything at the end. But the seeds do go forth, and the destructive weapon is neutralized and made less destructive or not destructive at all. So, you know, our implacable optimism goes on.
Always. Always.
And the image of the two suitcases is a, you know, a nice good and evil image that moves through the play, and that we try to push toward the betterment of human happiness, and that's what we're working at. Which, as you know, is what we're always working at.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a tradition in this theater, in a way.
Yes.
The thing that's hidden and out of sight, but in plain sight all the time.
Yes.
The theme of the three caskets in Lear, and the head in the hat box in that English noir play. What the hell is the name of it? About a bellhop.
Yes.
And a purloined letter.
Of course. That's another.
I'm adding another row.
No, that's.
But things hidden in plain sight.
Right.
Yes.
So, and I understand that it's also in a kind of a, like a very mixed media environment that you've created in that little theater.
We use a lot of movies, a lot of film. We use present television. Can you describe this, Brad? You know about the tech better than I do.
Yeah, we have two projectors and two screens that we project on the east and west side of the audience. That is part of the choice structure that Judith is talking about. So that there's live theater, and at the same time there is also video, live video, and film, edited, sound edited, video edited film. So the audience is left with a choice of being able to watch some of the action live if they want to look one way, and if they want to look another way, they can see a close-up of the actor doing the monologue on screen and hear the sound from the live actor and watch them on the screen at the same time. And it's part of the multimedia aspect has a lot to do with the empowering of the audience to force them to make choices, as Judith mentioned at the beginning.
I think it also can help people make associations between separate things. You know, that like you're in an environment like that, you look around, there's one image there and there's another image there, and click, in your brain they mesh together and they form something else.
We definitely use the video as part of the set too. At different moments, the east or west wall will be the that will be the mural on the wall, will be whatever is projected on it. It's not necessarily meant to be watched as a focal point, but it's part of the ambience. And technology in general is just very good. Judith says you have to throw the audience a lollipop every 2 minutes. And technology is a really quick fix way to do that now, especially with younger people, especially in the theater. And I'll add another, especially even in off-Broadway theater where we don't have big budgets for giant fancy special effects, but at the same time, technology has become so affordable that we can do certain things with multimedia in our theater off-Broadway that Broadway companies can't do.
And for instance, one of the recurring images on these screens is the street outside, is Clinton Street, and the actual people walking on Clinton Street, sometimes joined by the actors, sometimes just the passers-by on Clinton Street, so that we locate ourselves inside and outside on the screen.
Do you remember the Squat Theater on 23rd
Street?
Yes, of
course, wonderful.
They had one of the walls of the theater was a storefront, a glass storefront, and people walking by in the street could see in and see the theater.
Yes, I think they were wonderful.
And one of the things that they did was to perform a shooting and a murder, and then have the person run out into the street. And the night that I was there, a police car stopped the guy and threw him up against the actor and threw him up against the police car and started questioning him about what was going on. And finally, they called the station house. And
another old Living Theater tradition. The police go after the actors. It's been happening for at least 45 years.
Yeah. That happens. Yeah. We actually just had a play in the theater that won an award in Hungary named after the founder of the Squat Theater, but his name eludes me. It's Peter. What is? It's not.
It's a three-letter name, right?
No. But he's a Hungarian American. Anyways, yeah, they're tremendous. The Squat Theater.
Well, they're not functioning anymore.
No.
But you are, and. I don't know how you manage it, Judith.
I don't know either. We've been now for some 60 years on the verge of extinction, and here we are again on the verge of the danger of losing our theater and trying to find some support, some financial support to keep going, and very much it's very much in the balance whether we will be able to survive beyond the first 2 months of this year. But I'm sure that the Living Theater will survive, but it's in this wonderful location that brings us all together and that keeps us working in the way that we want to work. We're constantly in a crisis. But, you know, if you're functioning outside, the traditional system, not if you're functioning outside the system and you're always falling through the cracks. At some point, you meet crucial moments when you don't know whether you're going to make it or not.
Yet another old Living Theater tradition.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's like Isaac Bashevis Singer said about the Yiddish language. It's been dying for 200 years, and God willing, it will continue dying for another 200.
Yes, yes.
Well,
God willing, we'll be in crisis.
Yes, for another 62 years. Yeah.
I was about to say, this is where I came in. I remember when you were on 14th Street and your audience had to climb a ladder that was outside the building to get in to see the performance because the door was barred up by the federal government, isn't it?
Yes, with police on horses in front of it, yes. And still the audience got in. Some went up on ladders and some came over the roof. We had a few ex-Marines in the brig who knew how to guide people past enemy lines. And we filled the theater that way, although we were surrounded by equestrian police. Another theater, Living Theater tradition, as Jay Dobkin likes to say.
We're a remarkably traditional bunch of anarchists.
Yes. Very good.
And you did a performance tonight.
We had a wonderful performance tonight, yes. Yesterday we had a remarkable performance in the presence of the Grannies for Peace, group, who I much admire. One of them was 94 years old and knew Emma Goldman, had boasted of her memories of Emma Goldman. And they got up on the stage and did their own action. And that was yesterday night, and tonight that action was repeated. It was rousing the audience up to chant, "We will not be violent. We will not be violent." And they dreamed this up of their own,
and
they
just
brought it to us.
Yeah, seized the moment and turned the tables on us, and it came. We, the cast, who are used to guiding the audience, who become the cast each night, through this thing that they don't know, suddenly had some of these people jumping on us and giving us something we hadn't expected. And now it's in the play. It's like, you know, there's a Kafka line about the leopards broke into the temple and drank the sacrificial vessels dry. And after it happened a few more times and could be seen in advance, it became part of the ritual.
Yeah. Well, I remember something that Julian Beck did. It was the storming of the Winter Palace.
Yes.
And
in Prometheus.
It's based on an incident in the Russian Revolution when people rose up out of the crowd and just moved into the seat of government and sat in it. Among other things. And what Julian did was organize the audience into different parts of the attacking troops. It was just like a wonderful thing that he did.
Yes, we had the Red Guards, and we had the Tolstoyan pacifists, and we had the anarchists who crawled under the seats and rose up between the legs of the audience.
Home team.
And,
I don't know.
I'm also remembering another performance of his that I really admired, when he was George Bernard Shaw.
Oh, yes.
In and his paintings were the backdrop of the play. Wonderful. It was, I think, a part of Doctor's Dilemma.
It was the Archaeology of Sleep, I think.
Right. But the Shaw character was from
George Bernard Shaw. He was Shaw himself, just as he was Lenin.
That wasn't the Yellow Methuselah?
Right.
Yes, right. It was the Yellow Methuselah. Right. The Shaw play was Back to Methuselah, melded with Kandinsky's Yellow Spot. So we had the modernists and the traditionalists, and mixed it all up very nicely.
Well, you know, I'm talking in this group of people who were assembled in little ones and twos around, in some cases around the world, actually, that telling them that if they haven't one of these memories of the living theater, they ought to go out of their way to acquire a few, because
yes,
these
it's not
are,
too late.
These are precious theatrical moments that I've had the joy of experiencing in the company of the living theater. And you ought to get yourself a few. And
Wednesday through Saturday, 8 p.m., 21 Clinton Street, folks.
Wednesday, pay as you can.
Yes. Yes, in accordance with the policies of this radio station, we can say that Wednesday night is pay what you can night, and Thursday through Saturday night are not, but it's not very much, actually, the whisk
but
price.
Thursdays through Saturday are wonderful days of the week as well. And it's also very much worth coming Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Right. We just can't tell you how much it costs, but it's really not that much.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Right.
Not even a dead president could tell you.
You know, when I first came to work at WBAI, you and Julian and the Living Theater were just about to leave the city. And we had a program on every day called Opinion. And for a week, Julian talked about Gandhi and nonviolence in, in these half-hour segments at 7 o'clock in the evening. And I know a lot of people who wish that we had tapes of those wonderful programs. Might even be people listening who have some, and I would love to hear from you.
Martin Sheen was actually just at our benefit, and he talked a lot about Julian as a Gandhi figure and told this incredible story of Julian turning the other cheek, as it were. And
he talked about a guy that attacked Julian, mm-hmm, and hit him in the face.
On a stairwell.
And
knocked him backward, not only toppling backward himself, but toppling backward into Martin Sheen, who then toppled over. I mean, it was that kind of a blow.
Right, leaving a handprint on Julian's face.
A vivid red handprint.
And Julian saying, "I think I have to ask you to leave now." And yes, somehow the guy looked at him and left.
Right. This, by the way, this was not just any hulking person who hits you. This was apparently a heroin dealer there to collect a bad debt from one of the actors on stage at that point. And he apparently went through life, you know, this very large and powerful person smacking people around when they didn't do what he wanted, and had never had anybody just get up and say after that, just repeat, "Once again, sir, I must ask you to leave." That wasn't in his whole dictionary of possibilities, so he had no choice but to leave.
It was the surprise. He was surprised at not being aggressed when he offered aggression.
But Martin Sheen described it as a transformative moment in his actual personal understanding of nonviolent civil disobedience and nonviolent direct action.
A beautiful moment in his life that...
That was the moment when it became real to him.
And he has really had a career in which he has been remarkably consistent in supporting all the good causes and all the good people and doing the good works all the time, even though he did play the President of the United States.
Nobody's perfect.
No, that's a role. It's a role.
Nobody for president.
Yes, nobody for president. That's our motto.
And in fact, since most of the eligible voters, the plurality, if not the majority, in every presidential election vote for nobody.
Right.
So
right.
Nobody is the rightful president. Nobody should be telling us what to do. Yes. Nobody should be in charge of the laws.
Yes, because they have been selected.
Because nobody is the legitimate choice of the people to rule them. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, unfortunately, we at WBAI are beholden to the authority of the Federal Communications Commission. And sometime in this hour, I like to acknowledge it by saying this is WBAI in New York City, and we're also heard on KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, and we stream on the World Wide Web at 1 o'clock. We'll be joined by WJSR. JSR? Is that what they're called?
Do you mean 130 by WJFF?
JFF.
Or 130.
JFF. I
just want to say hi to all the folks out there in British Columbia. I had no idea you were listening, but, you know, sitting here on this side of the border, we really sometimes wish we were on the other. I know I do.
They're not listening yet.
Oh.
The JSR program is delayed and broadcast on Sunday. Now, if you're listening on Sunday, you are listening now. Hey, how's your health care in Canada? Pretty good, huh? Yay.
You know what you call an American with no guns and health care? Mm-hmm. That is, with health care and no guns.
A European?
Canadian.
Oh. Yeah.
Canadian.
Well,
No, disclaimer here, folks on there in Canada, we do understand that you are not, in fact, exactly like Americans, but it's still a good joke.
Well, I don't know whether it's such a joke, you know. I saw this, I think it may have been in Michael Moore's movie, a little semi-segment of the documentary, Sicko, about the, what Canadian health care was. And, yeah, this waiting room full of people, and they talked about previous times they had come and how they had been cared for, and he asked them what they were charged, and they said, nothing. Medicine is free in this country. And then he went to talk to the doctor, and the doctor said, yes, I can practice a kind of medicine that I really enjoy, where I don't have to turn people away. And then you saw this doctor walk over and get into his Mercedes. So you knew that these guys were not, you know, some sort of clerks, you know, being enslaved by the government to take care of the people, you know, and it was...
But they made a lot of money.
They do very well, and they have a much higher rate of the survival of infants than we do in this country.
When my daughter was an infant, she spent 4.5 months in Wales with her, strangely enough, her Venezuelan grandmother. Her mother took her over there for a while. And because the local health authorities knew that there was a baby in the house, over those 4.5 months, they got several visits. She got her first shots there. The nurses come to the house to you know, see the baby and make sure everything is great several times. And there was, I mean, here we fill out the paperwork, and that's an endless nightmare and takes up this huge portion. There was simply no paperwork. You know, they don't give you a bill. They don't give you something to fill out. They presumably list somewhere that they visited this house because there's a baby there. I mean, think of the savings on the economy there.
Yes, we are. We are very far behind in our organization of not only health care, but everything else, distribution, production. We're working on a
joy,
on an old-fashioned...
There is a shortage of joy.
A shortage of joy, yes. Absolutely. And that makes everything sort of bitter and difficult and arduous. And expensive. Expensive especially for those who have the least. The idea of talking about health care and then saying that we're not going to give it to people that don't have certain papers and certain documentation is so abhorrent. It should be an international outrage, like tonight's news about Uganda, where the head of the government said, out of sheer madness as far as I can see, homosexuals do not have human rights. It's sort of a crazy thing.
Spurred on by American fundamentalists.
And it's outraged everybody. And I think the idea of having a healthcare program...
New Jersey legislature said the same thing today. Is that right?
Well, they're not actually threatening to execute people in New Jersey. It's not in my instincts as a native New Yorker to speak up for New Jersey, but I will grant them that. And I see that Rick Warren, Obama's friend, according to the Times, is mentioned as one of those preachers who's behind the instigation of this hysteria in Uganda and other places, including America, of course.
But they've appointed a token transgender.
I'm saying that I'm surprised that the world isn't just as outraged at the idea of a child being brought to a hospital or a doctor who has two broken legs, and the question is not, oh, bring it over here, let me see what we can do with the legs, but do you have insurance? Mm-hmm. that seems to me as outrageous as the Ugandan craziness. And there isn't an outrage about it. And people are willing now to accept a health care bill that excludes people that don't have documentation.
Because, as Wanda Sykes said, I mean, of course, the last people we want getting health care are the people who prepare our food in the restaurants.
Oh, my God.
God forbid they should be healthy.
Or gross.
Yes.
Well, yeah, gee, there is a long way between the socialist, compassionate utopia that we yearn for and our actual existence. It's true. But I remember once Julian Beck said, and someone made it into a song, if we had all of our dreams, we would still yearn and be unhappy.
If the stars poured nectar into our mouths, we would still be sad. That's Julian's poem, yes.
Well, sad, but I don't think we would be so upset about the inequities. And
oh,
so,
for sure.
And have to, you know...
We can make it better.
Yeah.
We can't make it perfect yet.
Well, they're trying to make it even less perfect than it is. They're cutting back on the benefits for the homeless who are not even allowed to use the Section 8 vouchers that they were given. So... It's not something that you're not familiar with. I was in a play that had some homeless people in the cast who told us about their lives, and we tried to enact them. That was the body of God.
Yes.
That's another play where the audience becomes motivated to try to do something or to at least talk about the problem. And I still remember the people on the stage huddled around the fire barrels.
We were very lucky in being able to encounter a group of homeless people who would talk with us on the theatrical level, who were willing to share their joys and sorrows with us. It was a remarkable experience to do the Body of God.
Well, you expect to play Red Noir for probably another few months.
I hope so. If we can maintain our theater for another few months, we will.
And then, do you have something else in the works?
Oh, yes, but we're still working on it, and it hasn't been... We have nothing new to announce, though we do have some wonderful plans, fabulous plans, and as soon as we've got them together in a cohesive form, I'd love to come and tell you about it.
Well, all right.
But just for the record, we are definitely through January 30th. So that's your deadline if you want to make sure that you do not miss Red Noir. Wednesdays through Saturdays, 8 p.m., 21 Clinton Street, just below Houston and B.
It's appropriate. I mean, it's not inappropriate to give the telephone number of the box office.
If you want to, you can visit the website livingtheater.org.
And it's a great website. Yes.
And that's livingtheatry.org, spelled the British style with an R-E instead of an E-R. Livingtheatry.org.
We've reserved E-R, I think, too, in the domain.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Finally. And since you asked, the phone number is 212-352-0255. For those folks like myself who are hopeless Luddites still using the telephone.
Once again.
212-352-0255. For us old fogies who actually use phones instead of our little i-whatevers. I guess they're called iPhones, actually, but, you know.
For the people who are not in that particular category and who do use the Internet.
Yes, the interweb.
Go through Google Image and look at some of the wonderful pictures and videos of Living Theater in action. I wonder if we can get Judith some water. We'll try to get you some water, Judith. That was, you know, there's something in the lobby downstairs that I noticed the guy who was in security downstairs was wearing one of those masks. Mm-hmm. Did that make you feel uneasy or?
Yes.
Me too.
It wasn't expected.
Mm. Well, we're in theater. We're used to people in costume.
One of the things that we sometimes do here is ask people if they have anything that they want to say to you, whether they can call on our telephone number 212-209-2900, and you can talk to some of the members of the Living Theater. Some of the people who'll call will be expressing their own inner confusion and their own inner sense of theater. I don't doubt that that'll happen, but you know, it's worth confronting that. You know, I guess that's a kind of an Artodian thing. What do you think?
Yeah, they're just signaling through the flames in their own way. They're just signaling through the flames in their own.
Yeah, right.
It's good.
You're on the radio.
Yeah, that woman is 94 years old, and you, Emma Goldman?
Yes.
You got to get that woman on tape.
That's right. That's right. I'll take that seriously.
Yes, you must get that woman on tape. That's amazing.
Yes, those memories are incredible, priceless. You're right. Okay, I will follow your advice.
Yeah, that's really all I have to say.
Well, thank you. I know who you are, and you've worked at the Living Theater.
Yeah, twice. I was in the play about Larry Davis, and I was in a play about Mumia. Yeah.
Oh, well, hello.
Hi. I was wondering, the squat theater, were they squatters?
They were originally in Budapest.
His name was Peter Halasch.
That's right.
Right.
Very
nice
good.
Brad.
Very good. Peter Halasch.
Never heard of him.
Oh, yeah.
You know his company.
All right, great.
Take care.
That's it.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Hi, you're on the radio. See, there is no. This is so
through the flames.
Signaling through the flames.
Yeah, I kind of see him dancing around flames, in a kind of a Sears Roebuck Indian costume. You know, dancing
with
and
clothes on.
pretending to be a man called Horse. And, it's just that he chants and becomes hoarse.
Someone's on the air, I think.
You're on the air. Hi.
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 Hi. Let me see. I'm curious about Emma Goldman. I feel remiss on not knowing who she is. And I'm also curious. Do you know an actor named Ronald Ballard? I'm wondering because I'm just always looking to learn more and find out information.
Ron Ballard?
Mm-hmm.
How,
was he in the Living Theater? I'm wondering.
I don't think so. I don't remember that name.
I thought that he was a teacher at the Neighborhood Playhouse many years ago.
Yeah, he did do that, but I'm always trying to find out more about him. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering, was he a member of the Living Theater?
I don't think so.
All right. And tell me who Emma Goldman was. Thanks.
Emma Goldman was a leading American crazy anarchist who lived an exemplary life in the anarchist movement, inspired and continues to inspire many of us, and put a very fine feminist sexual foundation to the whole anarchist philosophy.
There's a portrait of her in the in Ragtime, the movie Ragtime, and she's also she has a few moments in Reds, but her story is you know, kind of an exciting.
A Russian Jewish girl from Lithuania came here at 15. Worked in a at 15 wound up in Syracuse working in a factory, a sweatshop, for $1 a week, and one day stopped at the florist she would pass every day and see the beautiful flowers she loved so much, and she said, "How much of that rose roses in the window?" And the florist said, $1 each. And so she thought maybe she should get a little more money, and she went to her boss, to the factory manager, and asked for a raise. She went to his office for the first time to ask for a raise, and he refused her, but she did see that he had a vase of 12 roses on his desk, and kind of each of those equal to her weekly salary, and that kind of thing got her thinking. And in a few years she was down in New York City living with two guys and raising hell. And continued to do so. Got deported to Russia, raised hell, got deported from there by Lenin, and raised to more hell.
Anything on YouTube?
You know what, you can actually, if you have the access to what our old friend W calls the internets, you can find, better than YouTube, her. I have seen video of her, probably is footage of her on YouTube, but you can look up what I know is available now in the wonderful world of public domain on the internet, her autobiography called Living My Life by Emma Goldman. Just Google that and you can read the whole thing, and it's a fascinating story.
Her most famous quotation is she was supposed to lecture before a group in, I think, in Buffalo, New York, and there was a pre-lecture dinner and party, and they were playing that mazurka, and she
drinking
got up and started to kick up her heels, and someone said to her, Miss Goldman, how can you lecture as a feminist and a socialist when you're dancing like that? And she said,
If I can't dance,
it's not
keep your revolution.
All right, now I think I heard that one. All right, cool. That's Emma Goldman.
Right. Goldman. Yes.
Goldman.
Right, and there's another maybe apocryphal story about her that was it Frick who ordered the troops? There was a very bad guy in the United States.
This is about her fundraising efforts to get a gun?
Yes.
You're speaking of that story, yes.
Yes, yes.
Well, she tells the story herself. So.
Right. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean it's true.
See, I was going to say I thought she was a Betty Boop type, but then I heard about a gun.
She went out to raise money to buy a gun so that one of her two boyfriends, Alexander Berkman, could go and shoot Frick. Which he did, though not fatally, and he served 14 years for.
Yeah,
but
he was a very bad shot.
Yeah, so supposedly the story is
she
told
was very bad at fundraising, too.
Yes, she went out to try. She had nothing to sell but her body, and so she tried that on the streets.
She didn't succeed, apparently.
But she got apparently a donation anyway, though she never had to sell anything.
She was beautiful, beautiful, and she'd have gotten lots of money.
Well, see, she had it worked out. She was going to buy fancy underwear.
Mm.
And then she would be able to raise the money. But she walked down 14th Street, and someone, because this was a notorious stroll at the time, somebody walked behind her, and she could hear their footsteps, feel their footsteps getting closer, and she involuntarily speeded up, and he speeded up, and she speeded up, and he speeded up, and finally she realized what she was doing, and the guy stopped and said, you know, I don't think you're really cut out for this work.
Thank you.
But she was a great, great hero. And
I don't think shooting Frick was a very anarchist act.
Well,
I think she had second thoughts about it herself, as did Sasha Berkman.
There is, of course, in the anarchist movement, a big split between those who think violence is necessary and those who think that violence betrays the entire concept of anarchism, which is human liberty. And if you shoot somebody, you take away all their liberties at once, and it's not a very libertarian anarchist action. So I'm again it.
You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
How you doing, Emma?
The spirit of Emma is doing well.
Well, I'm looking at a picture of her spirit, actually.
You are?
Oh. Yes. What's she saying to you?
Well, she's dressed in ragtime, like you said, and she used to call herself Dion Fortune. I don't know why, but she said she was the founder of the Society of the Inner Light and is recognized as one of the most luminous and significant figures of the 20th century of esoteric thought. A prolific writer, pioneer psychologist, powerful psychic, dedicated her life to the revival of the mystery tradition of the West.
Okay, I think that may be a different Emma Goldman. Yes.
No, but that was another lifetime that she may not know of. But I knew her.
Well, I try to handle one lifetime at a time. But.
And then you knew her at that time.
Yeah, let's just say I'm a very metaphysical person.
I doubt it.
Yeah.
But anyway, what is the name of the play?
The name of the play is Red Noir. It's written by a wonderful poet, Anne Waldman, and it's performed Wednesdays through Saturdays at the Living Theater at 21 Clinton Street at 8 o'clock.
Right.
And I'd like to see you there.
We do have a European branch of the company, and I think they may be doing the French translation, which is going to be called Rouge Black.
Emma Goldman is frequently mentioned in this play.
And she lived, by the way, as is mentioned in the play, right on Stanton Street at one point, and our block, literally, the theater is on the block that borders Stanton Street, so she's our neighbor.
21 Clifton?
21 Clinton, yes. The block is...
And where is that exactly?
It's basically
New
half
York
a block.
City.
If you know where Avenue B and Houston Street is?
Yes.
Okay, once you go south of Houston, it's not Avenue B anymore. It's Clinton Street, and it's only about half a block south of Houston. It's the block between Houston and Stanton Street, where Emma Goldman lives. So make a pilgrimage, an anarchist pilgrimage, down to our block. And
yeah, I just moved to New York a few years, not too long ago. I've just been here studying and meditating and getting ready for transition.
Transition?
A world transition.
Very good.
We're working
world
on that.
World could use
so
a good transition.
You're getting ready for transition, which means you're in transition on your way to transition.
I'm in and out of transition.
Good on you.
Anyway, thank you. Thanks for your time.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Bye. You're on the radio.
I was rejected by the Living Theater.
You were rejected by the Living Theater.
Yes, I wanted to play President Jackass.
Well, I can see why you were rejected.
But now you've had your chance. That's your big break. You're on the radio.
That's fun.
Don't get your, get those buckskin fringes away from that fire.
Is that the Sears Roebuck costume you were talking
that's
about?
That's the Sears Roebuck buckaroo. Right? Well, see, that Gresham's Law.
Good calls drive bad out of circulation.
No, the opposite. Well, good calls can... work
that's
the other
fun,
way.
Though, when you say, you know, call in, and those calls happen,
That could be fun sometimes, no?
Proof we don't screen her. We don't screen them.
No, that's why it could be fun sometimes.
You're on the radio.
Yeah, there you are. Hello, again.
You got to admire the persistence.
Oh, it's obsession. It's not persistence.
Sometimes you do get those at theater. Mm.
Well, there is a moment in the play where the audience is encouraged to give expression to something.
Several moments.
Oh, yes.
How do you react if someone does something that's completely...
Meshuggah?
As out there as he is.
Well, in some way we're pretty good at containing it. If it isn't violent... we can probably deal with it.
Yeah.
Violence, that's another problem. But if they're just yelling, Yehoah, we can deal with that.
Right. Somehow we can make one of our songs blend.
You're on the radio.
Hey, Yehoah.
There you are.
21 Clinton Street, next Wednesday. Hi. Pay what you like.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
And if it lives, Judith, I had a lovely conversation with you once. Do you remember?
Of course she does.
Miss Monroe. We discussed the life of Oedipus, how
Monroe.
He innocently killed his father,
Monroe,
the king.
Shut up, Bob, please.
I'm
so
trying to
rude,
speak. You're interrupting me.
You're so rude, Monroe.
I'm speaking to a lady. I'm not speaking to a person who has no respect for me.
Oh, yes, you are, Monroe. You're speaking to hundreds of people who have no respect for you. You're on the radio, Monroe.
And
people feel sorry for you sometimes.
But he had broken the laws of life that he ripped out his
The laws of life.
And he went out into the desert, and I say to you, he should have admired his hard-earned life.
Well, he went out into the desert, Monroe, and he encountered the Sphinx, and the Sphinx asked him a riddle. Do you know what the riddle was?
Yes, I think I know that. Why is Bob Fast the way
he is?
It's the one about legs, right?
Right. What is it that walks on four legs and then...
Four legs in the morning, two legs at noon.
Three legs in the evening.
And three in the evening. Yes?
What is it, Monroe?
I think Monroe...
My God.
It's a 50-year supporter of WBAI who thinks he has... bought airtime. You're on the radio. I believe, one more try. And you're on the radio.
You are terrorists of the mind.
Yes.
Hey, at least people are creating this late at night. I say congrats that their juices are flowing and that they're inspired by something.
I like that they're listening.
I like that WBAI is too poor to have a screener and you get this wonderful freeform radio.
No.
It's kind of like the living theater. Poverty has its few redeeming aspects.
I have to tell you that not having a screener is a decision that we made a long time ago, because not having a screener is very unusual in radio, because even the obsessed people like those, they try to respect the station's continued existence. They know that they couldn't do that if there was no WBAI, so they go just so far. They don't say one of those seven words or intimate one of those 235 million innuendos. And they, within the limits of their
It's just amazing to me that
they're part of the cabal.
It's just that it's this. If not for this, I would not realize that without screeners, every other radio station out there would be full of people going, hey, somehow that doesn't seem to happen, you know. Larry King doesn't get those calls on CNN.
No, he doesn't.
I don't have cable, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't.
Yeah. No, he doesn't.
West of the Rockies, you're on.
You're on the radio. Hello? And you're on the radio.
Hi, Bob.
Hi.
I'm glad you got Judy on the on your program. I haven't heard her voice in a long time. I wanted to remind her about the anarchist convention at Hunter College in 1973.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I was there.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yes.
With a real bomb scare and all.
And it was during the Symbionese Liberation Army episode.
Wavy Gravy was there. Lots of people.
Yeah, yes. Wavy Gravy was there. I was there. And, Judith, I want to ask you something, if you remember this. You and I and Julian Beck went to a little cafe somewhere down on 4th Avenue once, and I told you this idea I had about the Free Speech and Democracy Cafe, and you said, that's a good idea. Do you remember that?
Yes, yes. You but but that cafe never happened, did it?
Well, I think never it's a happened, great idea.
This is still a great idea.
Speaking of the Free Speech and Democracy Cafe, this is WBAI in New York City, KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, and soon JFF, WJFF in Grahamsville, Liberty, and Points North, up in the fracking area.
We can say that. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a dirty word, fracking, actually.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. But we're also streaming on the World Wide Web at WBAI.org. And are you listening in your car tonight, or?
Yeah, I'm parked over by 5th Avenue, and I'm not supposed to be talking on a cell phone, but that's what I'm doing, because I'm driving a cab, you know. I wanted to ask you, Judith, what do you think, looking back at that anarchist convention, what do you think? Was there anything that came out of that that was positive? Or did anything grow out of that?
What I would like to think is that there'll be one every year in New York City and in cities across the world. I wish you would rattle things to reorganize. Let's have one this year. Somebody has to get together and do some hard work, and we could have another anarchist convention. As to whether it has an effect, it had an effect on me. I'm sure it had an effect on thousands of people. It gives, it's a ripple effect in which people are aware that there's an anarchist movement, which is the first thing that we have to make people aware of, is the fact that there is already an anarchist movement. But Alexander Berkman said anarchism is organization and better organization, and it's nothing but organization. And we're not well enough organized to create another anarchist rally here in the city, and I think we should.
Well, I agree with you. It had an effect on me. One of the things that I found out that, or rather I perceived that, there's as many definitions of anarchism as there are anarchists out here, don't you think?
Well, that's
at least.
Right.
At least. You know, they
that's
say...
That's the definition of anarchy. No one one tells you the rules. Well,
right,
there are some rules.
Well, I was interested to hear what you said about violence, because what do you think of the people in Seattle who, they call themselves anarchists, and what did they do, really? They just tried to...
I don't know whether they called themselves anarchists or whether they were called anarchists by the hostile press and the police.
And to be fair, they did not kill hundreds of thousands of people, which is what's done by, quote-unquote, our troops in, you know, throughout the world. If you want to get upset about violence, let's be honest about where the real violence is. You know, the terrorist is the term, you know, the technical definition, I think, of a terrorist is someone who can't afford a jet plane to drop the bombs from. You know,
yeah.
When you have your own air force, then it's a different matter. But
it's like Abby said, you know, a terrorist has to hand deliver.
That's like, I hadn't heard that. I thought I knew all of Abby's great lines. I know he said the only difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, according to Abby Hoffman, is Democrats watch Jeopardy and Republicans watch Wheel of Fortune. And personally, I think he was giving the Democrats way too much credit.
Well, you know, there is that stream there, you know, and I feel it myself. I mean, I'm an ex-Marine, a former Marine, and I, you know, been working in the anti-war movement off and on since 68. And I'm still, you know, torn sometimes between violence and no violence, because I'll tell you, they never even notice unless you trash a Starbucks. You know, you can go out and demonstrate millions of people, but until you burn a car or turn a garbage can upside down, you haven't done anything to attract their attention.
No, you haven't done anything.
Well, I mean, Gandhi didn't do that. And
no, you,
Martin Luther King.
See, you overlook the effect of one anarchist on another person who witnesses the act. You're thinking only in terms of the person whom the violent act is directed against, you know, the people in recent history who threw bricks through the windows of banks, you know, they may have irritated the bankers, but somebody who had up to that moment thought of the bank as some kind of
sacrosanct,
you know, right, something akin to a house of worship, suddenly said, wait a minute, it's just a store with a glass window. What the hell are they doing with all my money?
Breaking glass, by the way, although it could shatter and potentially injure someone, basically that falls under the category of sabotage, not violence. I mean, I would consider violence to be something done against, if not human beings, at least other living creatures. And the idea that property rights are something, the right of property is equivalent to the right of a living human being or even animal, is just insane. And when people talk about violence, like what the weathermen did, which never injured anyone except themselves by accident, is violence. It's really confusing the issue.
It seems to me that to imagine that we can have no effect unless we hurt one another is really just tragically pessimistic. And I wish you happiness enough to come out of this infernal, terrible pessimism that our only form of reaching each other is hurting each other. That's a terrible idea.
It's not true.
Well, I don't believe that, of course. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. But, you know, you can't help but notice that any time there's any sort of destruction of property, that the state just takes it so seriously. If thousands of people demonstrate and hundreds of people get killed, they really take no notice of something like that. But, boy, turn a garbage can upside down, set it on fire, and here they come with the army, you know. But, I'm just glad to hear you, and I'm interested in your play. I hope I get a chance to run down and see it.
Come down and see it.
Thank you, Bob.
Bye-bye. You're on the radio. He must have an unlimited phone as well. You're on the radio. Hello? Oh,
good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, the riddle that you had said earlier, I think it's man.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's man.
Yeah,
and sometimes it's even woman, but
yeah,
mostly
actually,
it's man.
In the Greek original, the word is anthropos, which means human being. So it is man in the sense of mankind.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay. I mean, it's humanity, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
crawling in the morning of our life, walking upright in our prime, and then go hobbling about on a cane at the end. That's
And two, I think it's a good thing that you have some discussions of anarchism. While I'm not one, and I find a lot of the activities that they have done, and while I do appreciate Elmer Goldman, it's been more like guerrilla theater, trying to get a sentiment but not organization to actually take power, which is a very different discipline, and you know, I don't think it will ever be successful.
Well, we don't really want to take power. We want to get rid of it.
Hmm. Right, that's it, exactly. But nothing exists in a vacuum. Either you have power or people have power or the forces that want to exploit and oppress them have power.
That's another one of those terribly pessimistic views of life. I don't think those are the alternatives.
It's true. I mean, if parents don't have power over the schools, then the people who run the schools still have the power over the schools or whatever, hospitals or whatever.
There have been wonderful anarchist experiments in which the schools were run by anarchist councils in which that was not so.
No, but if the anarchist councils run the school, then they have the power. It's a contradiction.
Yes, but the anarchist councils consist of everybody. There's nobody who's not part of that. So, yes, everybody has the power. All the people
have
the power.
Yeah, but they have the structure to make that power real. It's not sentiment.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? Well, it's power. It's not a sentiment.
My favorite example of it is something that happened in Portugal, where there was, for a brief time after the Portuguese dictator had to flee the country.
What year was that?
1974.
Oh, yeah, right after the Angolan Civil War. I remember. Right. Yeah, I'm clear on that. Yeah.
Right. And
the army actually had led the coup from the left, yeah.
Right, and then, and for a change, the army didn't take power. Mm-hmm. They said the people will take power.
Well,
and
that was wrong.
Things happened like the passengers on the ferry boat put up a petition that said, we leave our jobs at 5 o'clock, but the ferry leaves at 10 minutes after 5, mm-hmm. and we don't have enough time to get here without running like crazy. Why don't you make it a little later? Mm-hmm. And the people who ran the ferry boat said, why not? You see, government to change something like that would have required, you know, years and...
I agree with mass organizations that have legislative power. That's not anarchy. Mm-hmm. You know, where people in their parish, this is what they face.
And how do you enforce that authority?
No, you don't enforce it.
Then maybe it is anarchy. If there's no violence to make other people go along, you
influence by education and developing culture.
Ah, you tricked me. You said you weren't into anarchy.
I'm not an anarchy.
We're just using different words for the same thing here.
But there is a structure. And anarchists I've seen and experienced have mostly been involved in guerrilla theater to shock sensibilities.
That's not true. I recommend to you a study of the anarchist forms that were developed in Barcelona in 1934 to 1936, when the beautiful city of Barcelona was run entirely by anarchist councils.
For how long?
Until the fascists grew things up and the Spanish Civil War
crushed it. I recommend to you the history of the Ukraine under Makhno.
But that was not successful at all. It only lasts for a little bit. The reason these things don't last is because
the people that are afraid of freedom come in and create a bloodbath and destroy anarchists.
It has an inability to protect itself and to protect its colleagues and the structures that they're trying to erect.
Yes,
because
surely.
We all need structures, right, to make things real or to fulfill them or to.
We need organizations, surely.
Yeah.
And organization.
Same thing, different word.
Does not translate into power. Mm. It does not translate into hierarchy. It translates into everybody being able to our being able to satisfy each other. I'm sorry?
Not everyone is correct, and unfortunately, we still deal with the dilemma of class. Not everyone is correct.
I think everybody is correct.
No, that's
you're wrong.
Yeah, well, I agree. You are wrong on that.
Yes, of course. It's easy to say that.
No. My boy.
Everybody
is correct.
You say you're wrong, and then of course that proves your point.
My boss is not correct. The owner of this building. Oh well, doesn't matter what building, but the people who own this location. They're not correct. The
ownership is incorrect.
And it's again an example of power and authority being exercised. Mm-hmm. Basically, what we want is the maximum power over our lives, which means other people will have the minimum power over our lives, and we will have the minimum power over theirs. There's certainly matters other. Every word can mean so many different things. I mean, you want to talk about authority? Judith has extraordinary authority in our theater, right? Not because she has any enforcement mechanism, because we know it's probably a really good idea to do what she says and we'll turn out a great play. Hold it.
You didn't hear what this guy just said.
Yes. Yeah,
he wants the address of your theater. He wants to come and see you in action.
Okay.
He wants to talk to you.
I just want to buy a ticket, actually.
Yeah, 21 Clinton Street, which is just below Houston and Avenue B.
That's lower Manhattan, right?
Right, yeah. It's half a block below Houston at what would be Avenue B above Houston, but it's Clinton Street there. 21 Clinton Street. And, again, Wednesday through Saturday through the end of this month, January, will be every Wednesday through Saturday at 8 p.m.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
Right, and Wednesday is Pay What You Like night, and Thursday is, I think we're not allowed to say the exact price. Not even Andrew Jackson could tell you if he were still alive how much it cost, on a completely unrelated note.
But I do think these discussions, when they're carried out systematically and without people barking on the phone or pretending to be a Native American or an Indian, it trivializes because I've been a few places. I just find like around a lot of questions, this place is an intellectual desert, right? And there's no systematic way for people to get an understanding or to give one, unfortunately.
Where are you from?
Well, originally we're from Boston, but I've lived in Europe and lived in the Caribbean and lived in Africa. And I've just noticed that people are generally, no offense, very uninformed about everything and have the biggest opinions about everything. They have no inkling of understanding of.
But that's an opportunity to teach them and to show them and to demonstrate.
My dear, it's only 24 hours in a day.
Yes, right. And use them that way.
And I'm amazed by how many of them Judith manages to use in this
world. And that's good. That's good, right? But I do believe in structure where, you know, people come and exchange vis-a-vis a class, whatever. You can't browbeat people on who's waiting on a line at the supermarket. You see, that there has to be a proper structure for the exchange of ideal.
No, but there's no reason why you can't make some little theater in the super.
Oh yeah, talk about it
on a radio show,
or the theater that you're doing it at.
You know,
that's why I'm picking up these tickets. But I do think without the structure, it's a lot of blowing in the wind, unfortunately, and people won't take it on or ingest it or digest.
You know, and if enough butterflies blow in the wind.
I have no idea what could happen.
But nevertheless, because it's everything, even in nature, are governed by laws, right? And thus society. Okay?
Well, the natural laws are real laws. I mean, you know, E equals MC squared. It's the law. You know, F equals MA, you know, you can't not have that. You drop the thing in a gravitational field and it falls. That's not like the government's laws.
But those laws are social and they're based upon economic gain. All right? That doesn't.
So far, okay. Got you there.
Well, let's talk about E equals MC squared, you know. I mean, they're beginning to think there may be some exceptions to that, you know. And
then the law will be slightly different from that, but it's whatever is going on out there, it's a real law, you know. Newton's law of gravity is something you cannot disobey.
Well, unless you can find a place where it doesn't exist.
Yes, but we're on the earth right now.
Yeah, but I like to stay in Manhattan as much as possible.
The laws of levity, you know, could be.
No, those are social laws because you have to recognize that freedom is the actualization of necessity.
Wait a minute. Let me hear that again. Freedom is
the actualization of necessity. Example, if I can give you one. If you and I are stuck in an apartment, all right, but we have to eat. We cannot go to the store because it's freezing below zero. Because one of us has a coat or something thick to we can
wear.
Wait
a minute. Someone stuck a menu under the door.
It's Manhattan. All right. It's New York.
Yeah, and you can order out. But say, hypothetically, there was no takeout. And we had to get to the grocery store or someplace, even to pick up the takeout.
Well, sure, you can make
so the
up
coat,
a lot of hypotheticals.
Yeah.
No, wait, I want to see where this is going. Okay. So
it is the coat that allows you to act out and to actualize necessity
like some
of
tofu with lemongrass. And
please. All right, I'm trying to make a point. The point
I know. I'm just exercising the law of levity.
Okay, all right, very good. So the things that we need to do, all right, and how to actualize it is a question about freedom, right? And freedom is only the actualization of necessity. We can actualize what we have to do by necessity, you see? And because I feel that people are confused about that, they see freedom as purely personal and personal expression. Oh. It is not. Freedom is social because humanity is social. Because man can only actualize himself in society, not in nature, in society.
Well, right. But see, part of the freedom that I insist on is not to see people sleeping on the street in sub-zero weather. That's the freedom that I insist on.
Freedom from want, freedom from fear.
You know,
I agree. And
although, if I want to sleep on the street in sub-zero weather, I don't think anyone has the right to stop me. You know,
well, it depends how your family feels about you. Maybe your grandchildren wouldn't want that, and they'll stop you. It's still social.
Fortunately, I don't have any.
Okay, but someone who loves you or cares about you.
Yeah, well, the city
listeners
is not doing as good a job as it used to, but preventing people from sleeping on subway grates. I don't know whether you noticed that.
Yeah,
in your travels. What it comes down to, I mean, beside all the theoretic rhetoric, is how you want to live your life and the choices that you don't want to have forced on you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I mean, in a way, that's what this play is about.
Well,
and I have the address. I'm going to really try to see it by the weekend if I can. I'm not free. I have to work, but
so that's necessity. Okay.
Well, I want to thank you in advance for coming to see us, and I want to thank you even more, perhaps, for trying to engage in a thinking conversation about what we have to do to make this a better world. And most of all, tonight, after what we've been through, I want to thank you for not saying, hey.
Well, you know, the reason why I try not to go off the deep end, history is on our side, but not time. Anyway,
right.
My name is Osei. I'll introduce myself at your play.
Okay.
Thank you. We'll
be
looking
forward
to
meeting
you. And you're going to have quite an evening in store for you.
And, you know, we're going to have a kind of a party here on the weekend. Celebrating the 50th anniversary of WBAI as a Pacifica station, and I hope everyone will try to, you know, put that on the list of things that they want to do and see.
Mm-hmm.
That's when is that? This Saturday?
Sunday,
or Friday?
I believe.
Sunday. I may have time. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But it was good talking with you guys.
And good talking with you.
Yeah, I just have a little bit of insomnia, and I'm just up working. I should be in the bed, but I liked what I heard, so I figured I'd give you guys a call.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
Right. Take care.
Thank you.
I'm going to be talking to Julius Lester and Steve Post, and Larry Josephson and some of the other members of the Old Boys Network. You're on the air.
Yes. There's a book where the Living Theater is referred to called The Cultural Cold War, The CIA and the World of Arts and Letters. And on page 357, it claims the Living Theater between 1960 and 1963 at some point was taking money from the Fairfield Foundation, which is a front for the CIA.
I'm very happy to take money from anybody because then
anybody?
They can't use it for bad.
Anybody?
They can't use
CIA?
It to buy guns.
Huh?
Yes, anybody who wants to give us money, I'm very happy to have it.
An anarchist, an enemy of the state.
Well, I'd rather abolish money, but as long as there's money, and as long as I'm in the unfortunate position of needing it to pay our rent and our light bills, I don't care to take anybody's dirty money is as good as anybody else's dirty money. Money is a bloody horror.
Yeah.
We're all constrained to use it.
I always used to say, if you can behave as though you found it in the street, it's okay. But if you have to go back to the same person you got it from before, then it becomes a...
CIA money. You take CIA money, you're exposed, and you act as if,
it's different.
And then you say you're an enemy of the state?
I want to thank you for listening so carefully to what I'm saying, because I'm trying to establish...
CIA money, right? CIA money, and you say you're an anarchist?
You've made that point, such as it is, a number of times. May I make one? May I make one and say that if you can find money in the street, it doesn't matter if it fell out of the pocket of the greatest pig in the world.
You take CIA money.
It's not.
You're exposed as taking CIA money, and you try to act as if it's no big deal, right? Interesting.
Look, I would like to take all of the CIA's money and use it for the peace movement. And if the CIA gave me all its money, I would be very happy to establish a great peace movement in this world with all the money that the CIA has.
That's totally
absurd.
Yes, I mean, yes. In 1963, by the way, was exactly when the Living Theater was using whatever money it did have to put on the Brig, which got the Living Theater shut down by the federal government. So, in fact, I would say, given the CIA's track record of incredible stupidity, if they actually were giving the Living Theater money and getting that result out of it, that would be about par for the course.
You see, I think that the CIA probably gets its money's worth giving you money, but they didn't get their money's worth. They got ripped off. They got burnt when they gave money to the Living Theater. And
about the cultural history of the Cold War.
Gary,
I bring this
Mile,
up, and immediately it's treated as if it's a joke, right?
No, we're treating you as though you're a joke.
Gary from Staten Island, my favorite Asian provocateur, who was banned from these premises for his alleged propensity towards violence, actually.
Right. Go ahead. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Oh. And you're on the radio. Hello.
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 This is Cloudy.
Right, in Westchester?
No, I'm living in Springfield, Massachusetts. I did live in Westchester about 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
I was in Yorktown.
Well, what can we talk about, Cloudy?
Well, you were talking about Emma Goldman a little earlier. I know that I saw the Howard Zinn play about her in Hartford about November when they had an anarchist conference. And the quote, you know, there's another famous quote of hers when President McKinley was assassinated by an ostensible anarchist. And she said that had she been there, she would have nursed them both, McKinley and the assassin.
Leon Czolgosz was the assassin, for the record.
Diplomatic Spanglish way of saying a plague on both their houses, but those were the old days when a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking, right?
Today, who knows?
One?
Anything goes.
And, well, that was, anything goes is from the 30s, but the olden days was, you know, 1901. And now it's over 100 years later, you have intrusive internet porn, nudity on television all the time, and we haven't gotten more explicit. She was along with Malcolm X, both classical in expression, but anti-creeps in the movement.
Are you troubled by intrusive internet porn?
No, and by the way, before we go, I got to find out which channel is showing nudity, so because I'm not getting it.
Well, let's see. It depends. You have to. I get a pretty wide range of cable, not porno channels.
Oh, okay. I mean, I'm just getting what comes over
Speaking
the air.
Of
so
wide range.
I'm not paying for it, so and then complaining about it.
Cable or something. Yeah. I would like to welcome WJFF in Grahamsville, Liberty, and
Points North?
Points North.
What state is that, or province?
New York State.
Oh.
And this is a radio
I've heard
station.
Of that.
This is a radio station. Probably now it is not. But during the summertime, when the river flows, this is a station that runs on water power. There's a water wheel that they call Lord Buckley.
Oh, in honor of the great...
The spinning wheel,
the water wheel
that runs the radio station. So we want to welcome WJFF and thank Miss Liberty, who does the program right before Radio Unnameable on WJFF, for ceding her time to us. And perhaps we can get a couple of calls from upstate New York. That would be nice if some people were able to maybe drive in or float down the ice-choked Hudson to to see the Living Theater. Or maybe they'll just chant. And I believe you're on the radio.
You believe correctly, sir. Listen, Judith, may I speak to you?
Yes.
About the riddle that Bob Fass was alluding to, I'm not saying it wasn't in the text, but I don't see the solution to Oedipus's problem as something that crawls as a baby on all fours, walks upright as a man or a woman, and then uses a cane in his old or her old age. I don't see that that's any riddle of the Sphinx. I think Bob is using an academician's technique of put down, and I say to you that I express the living horror of life, that I, as an honest person, couldn't carry on a conversation with you and have you answer as an anarchist should, in a heartfelt way, as to the dilemma of poor Oedipus.
One of the principles of anarchy is free association, and that means I don't have to be associated with you if I choose not to be, Monroe. You're on the radio. Hi, you're on the radio. And you are on the radio. Are you there?
Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Hi, good morning. This is Jeff calling from California. I just wanted to say hello to Judith.
Hello.
It's always a pleasure to hear you on Bob's show. And I just wanted to tell you what great pleasure I had in meeting and knowing Garrick a couple of decades back and during the Rainbow Gatherings, what a mensch he is, and how proud you must be of him, as well as your other creations.
This is Judith's son he's speaking of. A convicted camper, by the way. That's serious, folks. Federal conviction for...
Camping.
It's a whole Rainbow family story, but
yes, the Rainbow Gatherings go on. I understand in July there'll be one in New York State. I don't know the exact location, but come and enjoy.
That's great. That's all I wanted to say. Good luck to you, Judith, for many years to come yet.
Thank you. May I
Thank
you
you.
Know your name?
Jeff.
Jeff, where are you in California?
In Oakland, KPFA land.
Ah. Well, if you're listening probably on the worldwide, what you call it, right?
On the universe wide web, correct.
Right. Well, try to listen this weekend as we recount how WBAI became a principality of the Pacific.
Right. Well, I grew up. I grew up in New York. I listened to WBAI, and that's why, you know, to me, Bob, you're like the jewel in the crown. I, along with other listeners who I know have mentioned it from time to time, you know, really wish that you had more than one.
Paste in the crown. Paste in the crown. The Pacific.
No.
Judith is our Jew in the crown.
Right.
Real carrots. Yeah.
Well, what a necklace it is, anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Great to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And you're on the radio.
Oh, Bob, that is so smug. You know it all, don't you?
Most of it, yeah, I do. you're on the radio.
Yes, Judith, I interrupted by...
Woodrow again.
And you're on the air. Hello?
Don't you love the way a pussy farts, the way that...
I want to thank you for observing the seven dirty rules, words rule there. You know, you're right, Bob. Even though the flakiest of them have their standards.
Mm-hmm. You're on the radio. Hello?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm also calling from the East Bay of the San Francisco Bay Area. Before I make my comment on something, I've been listening on and off for the show, so I think I missed some vital information here. What is the name of the anarchist organization you're talking about?
The anarchist organization that I'm talking about is a worldwide movement that exists in towns of 5 people and in cities of 5 million, and we haven't yet been counted, and we haven't yet really organized into groups, though there are many very fine organizational groups that are working as anarchist groups. I'm not talking about one of them. I'm talking about all of us. I think everyone has a fundamental anarchist
What type of anarchist are you? I mean, who would be your inspiration looking back at the history of anarchism? Would it be Max Stirner? Would it be,
Piscator, probably.
Piscator wasn't even an anarchist.
Would it be,
three people who were mentioned in the play specifically, and that I personally have an affinity for, are Emma Goldman, Voltairine de Cleyre, and Peter Kropotkin.
Yes.
Okay, there
whom
you go.
I'm privileged to have along.
Those are three good ones.
Yes.
Many not as devoted to the concept that the anarchist principle is fundamentally a pacifist principle, and many very good anarchists don't go all the way with me on that.
Right.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
That actually brings me to something else I was going to ask you about, because you're identifying yourself as a pacifist as well as an anarchist.
No, absolutely not opposed. I think it's the same thing.
Right. Well, that kind of brings me to another question. There's a pacifist organization out here called the World Without War Foundation.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And they're strangely, I feel kind of shaky even saying this. They are pro-war pacifists.
Uh-huh.
You don't have a problem with that concept?
I do. I think it's a contradictory concept.
Yeah, I kind of thought so, too. But they said it's okay if you're fighting something that's really bad, it's okay to take up arms.
Well, A.J. Musty said being a pacifist between wars is like being a vegetarian between meals.
So yes. The World Without War Foundation was involved in supporting the Contras in Nicaragua and so on. And these were some of the same folks that helped found the Pacifica Foundation back in the 40s. Now, I understand, I've been told by reputable source, I'm not saying this is true, you know, you had your caller that was accusing you of taking CIA funding. I understand the Pacifica Foundation was founded with CIA funding. That the
Ford
that,
Foundation funded, I think.
Yes, which came
may
ultimately
have,
from...
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, but as I say, if you take money from, I don't know, from the most piggish pig, and you spend it on something that the pig doesn't approve of, somehow you've laundered the money.
Well, I don't know. I mean, yeah. I think it's a complicated issue, but...
Look,
but
all money is filthy. All money is filthy.
Just make sure you bite the hand that feeds you and you're on the ethical high ground.
I think it's not... I don't think it's right to bite the hand that feeds you. I think you should be loyal to the hand that feeds you.
It depends upon what the hand that feeds you is feeding.
Whose hand it is, right.
You.
I get that, but... You know, I wanted to point out that throughout recent history, many, many progressives, revolutionaries of all sorts have had CIA funding. Just a couple who've openly admitted it, for instance, Gloria Steinem, who in her early days as a, she worked quite openly for the CIA in as a propagandist.
Well, she worked for Hugh Hefner too.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, but well, anyway,
I think she was an undercover bunny, though.
Another example might be Timothy Leary, who famously said about the CIA, "They're the liberal mafia. That's the best. I forget how he said it, but they're the best kind of mafia, the liberal mafia."
So there's apparently a lot of CIA money being distributed out there to various folks on the left, and I really want to know, where can I get some of
it?
Because none of it seems to be coming my way.
Yes.
Yes. I think that every time you touch a dollar bill, your hand is covered with blood. On the other hand, we are, by the social forms that we live in, trapped to use money. I have to have money. One of the opening lines of our play Paradise Now, which started outside the gates of paradise, was, you can't live if you don't use money. And this is one of our tragedies, that we're stuck in a system in which an unjust bookkeeping form has taken over all aspects of our life, that we need to do it, that we need, if we want to create theater, we have to have some money.
If you want to travel, you have to have
money.
A passport.
If you want to eat food, you have to have money. And it's a horrible trap, and I think our goal should be the abolition of money, replacing money with reasonable forms of social intercourse that we know about.
Non-coercive. And certainly money is coercive.
Money is always coercive. On the other hand, money has nothing to do with bringing the apples to the city or with curing people of their diseases or of building a building. None of that has to do with money. Money is an interruption to human creativity. And there are alternatives. And what I want us to do is to study those alternatives and find out how we can get rid of this awful form in which this accounting system has taken over human life and find other forms of production, distribution, activity, all human activity, enjoyment, all these things are not dependent on money, and the mythology that we are dependent on money is what we have to destroy. A mythology about money, and understand that we could live a much better way, organizing life on a different and more humanistic and better level.
Well, I really like what you're saying here, but the point I was getting at is that I think these people that are so quick to point a finger saying you're corrupt because you took CIA money or something like that, I mean, as you said, that could be pointed at almost any leftist organization or movement. But the fact is, I don't think, as progressives, I don't think we should be going for some kind of moral purity. What you want to be, what you want to have is integrity.
Sure.
That means integrity means that in every way that you can, you're consistent. Whatever your worldview is, it's a consistent world. Your actions and your words harmonize with that.
Sounds like moral purity to me.
I'm against all these like boycotting corporations because they do something you don't approve of, because essentially you'd end up boycotting all corporations. Now, I'm not saying that would be a bad thing, but it's not practical for many of us. Many of us are dependent upon let's say information technology that's made by large corporations. I don't think we should try to be pure.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
I think it's impossible.
Never mind the information technology. I can't even make my own spaghetti. I have to buy it from corporations, through other corporations that are selling it.
But I buy my spaghetti, but I make my own sauce.
Ah, likewise.
So that,
okay.
That perhaps is a compromise.
That's a good beginning.
Making pasta is not easy, and, I've made, when I tried to make gnocchi, it just sunk to the bottom of my stomach like eating a brick. So, there's something to be said for Barilla or whoever that makes that.
I get whatever pasta is on sale at the supermarket.
Yeah, that Walgreens pasta. Yeah, but. I don't think we should try to be pure.
Why not?
I think it's a mistake.
Then where's the integrity? I mean, how is impure compatible with integrity, which was the term you used?
Yes.
Where is the integrity of impurity?
In a corrupt world, you can't be 100% uncorrupt.
Yes.
All
you can do is try to make it a better world.
Right.
Exactly.
But there is no... Now there's certain what would you call them, escape modes, like you want to get off the grid, you want to go live in the woods and be self-sufficient. I think those things are admirable, but not all of us can do them. Maybe some of us don't even want to do them, but it's an admirable ideal, but as long as we're living in this corrupt world, we should, rather than rail against the corruption and take 20 showers a day, metaphorically, to try to get ourselves clean, we should rather try to clean the streets. We should feed our neighbor. We should plant a garden. I mean, you can name a thousand things you could do that would be good deeds.
All of them moral and pure.
So focus on those. Focus on the good deeds that you can do to remain pure and stop being so insistent about what the current system forbears that we do, because it is what it is and it always shall be.
I don't think you can be pure, and maybe I bought into the system.
But don't concentrate on the fact that you can't be pure. Stop that. I think we need to be.
I mean. There's a problem.
We need to relax a little bit
Bob
about
Fass,
it.
I think Bob Fass knows this song. It's an old Gil Scott-Heron song called There Ain't No Such Thing as Superman. And I wish every progressive could internalize the lyrics of that song. I wish every cynic would just give it up.
I wish every cynic would just stop adding unnecessary.
I mean, there's no Superman, but you can always be a mensch.
To the just focus.
Focus on whatever level
of purity you feel you can live up to, and try to push beyond it every day.
Right, and I think people should internalize sympathy for the devil. And,
who are you, the Dalai Lama? What are you talking about purity?
Well, if you're trying to insult me by comparing me to the Dalai Lama, thank you.
I am not trying to insult you. I think you folks are very admirable. And if anyone is a saint on this godforsaken planet, I mean, it's Bob Fass. Let's be real.
Yeah, I think
absolutely. And you folks, I mean, in my wildest dreams, I couldn't be as good.
But you could. Just have wilder dreams.
As compassionate as you folks are, I love you so much. My heart is breaking right now.
And you sound pretty compassionate, actually.
I think you're deceived about one thing. I don't think that we think either that we are pure or that anyone can ever be 100% pure. I think that what we're saying is we should be as pure as we possibly can be. We should be as truthful as we possibly can be, even if we can't be entirely truthful.
Well, they hit it from the other end. I mean, maybe the way to look at this is rather than there was always this tendency of certain moralistic movements that they want to kind of turn the world into a monastery.
We want to keep the screwing going on.
Yeah, rather
that's
than
that's one of those words we can use, right?
Monastery?
No, screwing.
Monastery should be outlawed.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, so yeah, no monasteries for I'm
no
Jewish.
No monasteries.
Yeah, we like to have a sex life.
I think maybe since you keep talking about purity, I think maybe what the best option for people that are thinking along those lines is to find some kind of personal purity. Which you can achieve.
Then you're saying that you can't change.
You've started from the premise.
This is the world we live in. Therefore, this is the world we're going to live
in.
If you start from that point, you have to say we live in a world with slavery. That's the world we live in. You know, we live in a world with. I mean, whatever it is, you can say at a certain point. Look, we live in a world where there's taxation but no representation on this side of the Atlantic. Only in England do they get it. That's the system here. And I hear that every day to this day. Well, you know, in this system, in New York State politics, of course, the rich are going to have their influences. Why? Why? When it's wrong, you know? We can change things. We can change things as long as we don't say we can't change things.
We can, but since you keep saying purity is this thing to strive for, I'm saying, why not do it through your own personal habits of, I can have a better diet. Maybe I can be a vegetarian.
Hey, I am a vegetarian.
Maybe I can be a vegan. We'll smell
you.
And so on.
So, we are
absolutely. Because if you're trying to talk politics and you're actually still consuming meat, which is disastrous on an ethical and environmental level, you know, in terms of its contribution to global warming or its contribution to animal suffering. Of course, it's a necessity.
It's a deep what you just said is a deep truth. But there's so many ways we can improve ourselves personally. You know, you can do yoga, you can meditate, you can even use
you can meditate, and that's fine for you, but it doesn't make the world a better place, which being a vegetarian does.
You're the one that was talking about purity. I'm saying bring your own personal purity out into the work you do, into the world, rather than some kind of enforced purity of imposing your moral standards on others or boycotting corporations that do bad things, which ultimately would mean you would boycott every corporation because they're all bad.
I don't think any anarchists want to impose anything on anyone. The concept of anarchism is not to impose anything on anyone, whether it's purity or integrity or Buddhism. We don't want to impose anything.
Isn't the idea of anarchism, in a nutshell, that people work function best when they come together voluntarily? In fact, almost everything that's worthwhile in the world is done by people self-organizing. And that it's wrong to coerce people into doing things, even if you think they're really good things. You shouldn't force people to do them. And I think that's where people like you and me differ from many, many people on the left, to think it's okay to twist someone's arm if it's in a good cause.
Yes, I know, but we don't believe that.
No.
We don't believe that at all. We're against the idea of twisting anybody's arm, ever.
That's what we don't want to do.
You can
change people, as the earlier caller said, by educating them, by getting them, by...
I try to do it in the theater.
Enlighten self-interest. Say, show them that your way is better by example, by logic,
by theater,
argument.
By music, by poetry.
By culture, yes. Well,
yes, culture.
By making them laugh.
Making them laugh.
Comedy. Okay, back to levity.
Comedy is, and of course, it's opposite gravity.
Right. Hey, thank you for your call. You've really livened things up. You want to stay on the phone while I answer another call, too? Put it on conference.
Okay. It is.
And you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, Judith, what did you think about, that Peter Kropotkin supported United States entry in the First World War. Doesn't it go against anarchist principles?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would disagree with his opinion there. No matter the fact that he was a very great anarchist teacher and a great anarchist example, he was wrong about that. He was saying, we don't have saints and gods.
He was a prince.
I think he was a prince.
But he got over it.
Well, all right, he was a prince.
He didn't actually like to be called that. Although I get a big kick out of it.
I can understand why. In anarchist circles, that's not going to get you very far, right?
I don't know. I've gotten as far as I need to get in anarchist circles.
I certainly don't approve of anybody.
I don't approve of anybody approving of any kind of warfare or murder or violence or arm twisting or whatever you want to call it. I'm for nonviolence. I'm an anarchist because I'm a pacifist.
That's not the opposite way around. Judith, that's where we disagree. See, I'm a Marxist.
Uh-huh.
And having looked at American history, America, unfortunately, is one of the most violent, bloody countries in the world. I mean, I think it's more bloody than the history of Europe.
Yes.
The murder of the Haymarket Martyrs, Frick was the cause of the Homestead Massacre
when
Dale Carnegie let him take over his corporation.
Andrew Carnegie. Dale Carnegie.
Andrew Carnegie, that's right.
Dale Carnegie had other ways of influencing people.
Yeah, and a ship floated up the river and the workers were there waiting for him. It was a bloody massacre.
Yes, it's a horror.
And 1914 Ludlow, 1911 Triangle, I mean, on and on and on and on.
And how about 40,000 people or something a year dying because of lack of access to health care?
Yeah, sure.
That's also a violence. I'm sorry.
I mean, I think the only way the ruling class is going to give up their ill-begotten wealth, these filthy parasites, is that they're overthrown by a force of arms.
How about getting rid of wealth? Money and the whole monetary system.
Sure.
If you're looking for a conflict based on arms, I have news for you. They've got better ones.
Comrades.
That's not the way to go.
I'm calling you comrades.
They'll win that one. Okay, comrade.
Comrades, I think
I think money is a horrible evil. And you know, as a squatter on the Lower East Side, thanks to a friend of mine who's no longer on the Lower East Side, I actually learned how to eat without using it. I found plenty of garbage cans in New York to eat fine leftovers.
And
you know, dumpster dive, which is the punk, you know, an 18-year-old punk rocker that hitchhiked or rides a freight train from anywhere bum bleep in the United States, dumpster dive, then you can't tell him or her otherwise. That's a tradition in the punk rock movement, the squatter scene on the Lower East Side.
And as a former squatter and experienced dumpster diver, I probably should have spoken up when Judith said that it is impossible to live without money and said, you know, you can wrangle it, but yes, you know, you're right there. That's a very, very, very small area way out under the edge of the bell curve in our society, but it does exist, and more power to those who do exist that way, who are living on the cutting edge of a revolution.
I love it when people take pity on me and hand me a dollar or two or something. Oh, here's this. You want me to buy you a sandwich? That happened a couple of days ago.
Just make sure it wasn't a CIA dollar. You'll get in trouble with some people.
Oh, now I'll take CIA money. I'll use it for what I want to use it for.
Isn't Kropotkin really a model of the ideal that you're talking about? Even though, like all of us, he wasn't perfectly consistent in his stances, and he did take some positions that are perhaps not harmonious with the highest vision of anarchy.
Speaking of that which is not harmonious with the highest vision, this is WBAI in New York City, KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, and WJFF in Jeffersonville, Grahamsville, and Liberty, New York. Thank you. Excuse me. Oh, yes, and we are screaming and streaming on the World Wide Web at WBAI.org, among other places.
Forgive me for raising my voice, Bob, but I think Kropotkin was a person that, to my mind, seems like a really complete individual. He was
he was a great scientist on the side.
He was a scientist. He was a spiritual person. He was a political activist.
Yeah, when I first read about Kropotkin, he reminded me, strangely enough, of the Prophet Muhammad and his trajectory from being part of the royal family and integrating into the other classes. And
well, where did you hear Muhammad was in the royal family?
He wasn't.
He was a businessman.
I thought he was royalty.
What
am I confusing that with? There's somebody like that one of the great prophets that was.
Oh, God, but you're thinking of Buddha, probably.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Marx, Engels, and Lenin all came from
Buddha. Buddha was a prince.
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to. I'm sorry.
And Trotsky too, I believe.
Lenin was a poor boy from Liverpool.
Bob
Dunn Sr. was a
prince. I recognize the other one. I have nothing against John Lennon. I have nothing against the Beatles. I'm proud of the 1960s.
I'm going to go on to some other calls, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi. I wanted to let you know about a couple of anarchist events, which...
Great.
Cater to the idea that Judith is talking about in a small way, and I'd love it if Judith could actually come out to one of these, and Bill, maybe you do, and tell us what you think about the way they're going. One is called the Really, Really Free Market, that's F-R-E-E. It takes place at Judson Church on the last Sunday of the month, every last Sunday in the afternoon.
Uh-huh.
And the other one is called the Very, Very Free Market. It takes place in Sunset Park, usually on the third Saturday. And this month it's going to take place in a new kind of identity and shape day after tomorrow, on Saturday between 1 and 5. And it's been renamed Regifting Day, with the pitch being a whole lot of people got a whole lot of gifts at Christmas and Hanukkah and Eid and New Year and Kwanzaa, which they don't need and don't want, and they can't keep in the closet anymore, and they can't give to relatives because it's relatives who gave it to them. And this is a nice place to come and anonymously give it all away. So the idea is whatever you bring is free, whatever you take is free. We have a WBAI member called Max Mazur, who's going to provide some Bhutanese rice free of charge. And on Friday night, we're going to go out and do some dumpster diving in Brooklyn Heights and organize some free food the next day.
And could you just tell us again? You said that this weekend is the where and when exactly?
Yeah. My name is Arun Aguiar, and if anyone wants to call me, the number is 718-561-6055. This weekend will be the sixth monthly free market in Sunset Park, one of the most beautiful and best-kept secrets of New York, because the park is so beautiful. But this is taking place right near the 45th Street station. That's the R train to 45th Street. And then when you get out, it's in the social hall, very, very large social hall of the Trinity Lutheran Church, which is on 4th Avenue, right between 45th and 46th. If you're coming in from Manhattan, get in at the back of the train. That will give you the least amount.
Tell us again the hours of the Sunday event at Judson Church, because that's near enough our neighborhood to walk to.
Judson Church is run by an anarchist network known as the In Our Hearts Anarchist Network. For your computer literate people, you can check their website.
What time is the event?
3 to 7 every last Sunday of the month.
And that's at West 4th or West 3rd Street, is it?
It's on Washington Square South, right across from the Washington Square Park.
Okay, I'd like to try to attend that. That would be good.
Yeah, there's a handicapped entrance where if you're bringing a wagon or you want to take a wagon load of stuff home, a whole lot of people come and take large wagon loads of stuff home.
You shouldn't have said home, because the members of the Living Theater are repeating at the last moment of the play, The Body of God, when they say, I want to go home, I want to go home.
And they're
tired. Then they want to go to bed.
We get a big show today.
They did a little show a couple of hours ago. And
we rehearsed,
right,
and we worked very hard all day.
I hope, Judith, I hope you get a better review than the nasty review that you got for the, I don't know whether it's this show or the previous show. But
We got a lovely review from the New York Times.
Yes.
We've got some good reviews, and we've got a few bad reviews.
Good review from Backstage, and... Theatermania.com,
NYTheater.com.
Of course, there's always some people that are going to hate our work. That's part of being a controversial theater.
And for some reason, the Village Voice always sends one of them.
Yes.
The same one. They've picked somebody who just hates everything that we do and decided. It's like sending somebody to a Bob Dylan concert who, you know, you want somebody who has an appreciation of his career and its ups and downs and whatever, but somebody who just hates everything Bob Dylan has ever written is obviously the perfect choice to go review his concert, and The Voice seems to think the same way about us.
They spell the name correctly, though, don't they?
Yes, that's it. Theatry. Living Theatry.
This is Arun again. These two free markets have never been properly reviewed, but I saw an article by a guy called Jim Dwyer in yesterday's Times, where he talked about stores on 34th Street, like H&M, abandoning huge amounts of clothing.
Yes,
but instead of putting them out where people can retrieve them, they actually have a worker who goes through each piece of clothing and slashes it so that it's not usable. And then he described a couple of Hispanic journeymen, man and a woman couple, who go through each of the boxes, and then one in every 10 pieces or 20 pieces, they're able to find something which the worker didn't slash, and then they can reuse it.
And this
so
is
I'm going to write to him and ask him if he wants to come out and check the anarchist free market.
Yes, have you, by the way, did you hear that was yesterday's news in the Times? And today's follow-up is that the H&M has now changed their policy, announced in embarrassment that they will donate to whichever sources take used clothing for such, you know, charitable causes. They will be donating the clothing to charity from this point forward. Because they got so embarrassed by that, which is a good lesson to us all in the need for talking about things and publicizing and exposing.
Yeah, in the Sunset Park free market, we have deliberately not dealt with corporations, even grocery stores. And we basically find stuff. We rescue stuff. We people come and give stuff. I think it's a nice, easy corporate conscience salver and cleanser to say that we're going to give it to you, because they're probably wasting huge amounts of resources negligently, carelessly, and callously, which nobody's watching. So, you know, I think the whole principle, the whole concept of design itself is inherently wasteful, and they're not addressing that issue. So they're covering their CYA by saying that we'll now donate it to a charity.
Yes.
But who knows how much waste they're creating, which is...
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll spend whatever they spend giving away clothing to the poor, they will spend far more telling us all how great they are for giving away clothing to the poor.
One more thing I just wanted to mention. There is an anarchist book fair that's going to be coming up in April. It's the 4th annual anarchist book fair, April 17th at Judson Church, and April 18th there will be some panel discussions. And talking with some friends who are sitting with me right now, I just realized we'll probably do a free market just to coincide with the anarchist book fair. And we talked to them about building it into the program. I know last year the Living Theater built a whole arts component around the anarchist book fair, which was so fantastic.
Yeah, hopefully we'll do that again this year.
Excellent. I came over there and fell in love with this group called Holy, Holy, Holy from St. Louis.
What? Name was Arun?
A-R.
A-R-U-N, and its the last name is A-G-U-I-A-R.
Well, you were running for a seat on the board, right?
I ran, unsuccessfully. Right. I ran and under the rubric or the banner of the non-aligned movement. And we were successful in winning one seat for our movement. Manijay Sabha, a Persian mother of two adult children and a longtime anti-war activist. She was in Gaza with the Viva Palestina and the other people who went on the convoy. And she went on a hunger strike for 4 or 5 days.
I don't want to short circuit your talking about that, but I hope you'll join us on Sunday.
Sunday? What's going on?
Well, this is the 50th anniversary of the time that Lou Schweitzer, who owned a radio station in New York City, decided that he couldn't stand the radio station anymore because it was able to sell all of its commercials. And so he said, I can't listen to the station anymore. I'm going to give it to the non-commercial Pacifica Foundation. And he called these people, these crazy people in Berkeley, California, and he said, would you like a radio station in New York? And according to the story that I've heard, they hung up on him. They didn't believe it. And he called them back. He was very persistent. And here we are, 50 years later, still limping along. And you had the interest in us to run for the board. Keep it up.
You know, I bet he will.
So if Monroe is listening, Monroe, take hope. If anybody hangs up on you, don't worry.
And I'm
hung up on Bill Schweitzer, then hang up on you. But I'm so glad you reminded me of this, because I just realized I made a promise to Janet Coleman to try and get somebody to donate a cake for the birthday party, and that's what I'm going to go work on. So I'll go off the air. Thank you so much.
I was just thinking, Lou Schweitzer probably would have had better luck on his first call if he hadn't kept going, hey.
Well, Judith, I thank you so very much for coming up here, and it's so wonderful to spend a few hours with you.
I'm very happy to spend a few hours with you, Bob, and with your audience, and to be here with some of my Living Theater people, and I hope we can come back sometime and go further about our new work, our new play, and tell you what we're doing all the time.
And what you're doing now is called Red Noir. And
yes.
It's at your...
Yeah, 21 Clinton Street, which is half a block below Houston and Avenue B. Houston becomes Clinton below that.
And the telephone number of the box office?
212-352-0255. Or you can just go look at www.livingtheater.org. Living Theater, all one word, with theater spelled with an R-E at the end. Livingtheatre.org. And that's going to be, we're going to be performing this play, Red Noir, a detective thriller. By Anne Waldman, yes, a great American poet. Every Wednesday through Thursday through January 30th, at least, through the end of
Wednesday through Saturday.
I'm sorry, Wednesday through Saturday. At 21 Clinton Street, 8 o'clock, Wednesday night, in keeping with our long-term project of abolishing money, is Pay What You Like Night.
Wait. You couldn't leave without doing a...
Let's do a chord right now. Okay.
I forgot his name as I kissed away the sea. Kiss fingerprints, walk the window. Still the empty crib was standing in its old accustomed place. but from 'neath a little blanket.
Thank you. as she invites you up into her room. And you're so kind, so gentle, not to go to her too soon. And she steals your voice and leaves you howling at the moon.
been married about 6 weeks. She stayed, we recorded, loaded up the news, down the road she started.
Home, baby, I won't be back no more.
democracy is coming any day to the USA. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Bill.
Fred, hi.
Yes, hi. Bob?
Bob's oh, here.
He's out of the room. Hi, Bob.
He's within earshot, though, I think.
Okay, well, I tried to call in when Judith was there. I had an alleged brilliant idea for a play. But I just wanted to clear up a little housekeeping, as they say in the business. For one thing, I just missed the changeover when we picked you up. But Liberty Green, who precedes your program, wished WBAI from, and in particular, Radio Unnameable, a happy 50th anniversary.
Thank you very much for that.
What I did catch was, I think this will play.
I'd like to wish Bob a very happy new year.
So she wished Bob a happy new year.
Yeah, we heard that all right. Thank you. Happy New Year to everybody there at JFF.
Okay, the two things. One thing last week, the volume on the handset was a bit low, and when I mentioned the Department of Environmental Protection, the DEP, Bob had said that's a national organ, federal bureau, and I didn't hear him right, and I agreed. So just to clear that up, it's not a federal bureau. It's actually it's a New York State Bureau of Environmental Protection.
That's the DEP, the New York State Department of Environmental Protection.
Right, and it specifically oversees the watershed area. So I wanted to clear up that mistake.
Okay, that's good. Good that you did.
Well, why not?
Yeah. We want to be accurate.
The other thing I heard earlier. The concern about whether or not we were hydropowered in the winter when the when Lake Jefferson was frozen.
Right.
And no, of course we're still hydropowered because
I thought so.
The water is taken from below the surface of the lake. It's almost as if you stuck a straw in the side of a styrofoam cup. The water's taken from below the level of whatever ice there may be.
And it never freezes to the point where it doesn't flow.
No.
Wow.
No. The water always flows, mm-hmm. but it certainly flows like 5 feet beneath mm-hmm. the level of the ice.
Well, so you have hydropower all year round.
All year round. The only time it's a little slow is if there's a very dry spell, and even then it still works, but it's a little less. You know, in like August or September. So I just wanted to mention that.
What would be the temperature that comes out of there if it doesn't freeze? Is it right around freezing, do you think?
Yeah. You know, I don't know exactly, but I guess it would probably be, you know, like with geothermal heat exchangers, when you go 5 feet down, there's a constant 50 degrees. You know, 50, 52 degrees.
Right. In some places, it's even hotter. Iceland gets much of its hydroelectric power from the hot springs.
Oh, right. Well, they have hot they have hot springs. But a heat pump for geothermal heat and cooling works just the opposite of a refrigerator. You know, a refrigerator takes 90 degrees and turns it into 35 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
A heat pump takes 50 degrees and boosts it up as high as 130 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, geothermal, it doesn't produce 50 degrees. It can produce, you know, nearly 100 degrees more with a heat pump. But anyway, that's another story.
Okay, and you faxed something also, which I ran out and got, and I guess the moment came and went. I don't know whether you can describe it over the air.
Oh, no, it just had to do with the casino issue up here, and these guys just never stop trying to... take whatever land is left from our Native American brothers, and they just keep showing up like a bad penny. But there was the former Empire Resort head Joseph Berman said that he was told to stay away from the casino meetings by these criminals, call them what they are. But the paragraph that I had outlined for you or drew attention to the name. Of course, there are foreign countries involved in this, and I think that these are. I think they're from Malaysia. But anyway, he charges that he butted heads several times with Empire's new partner, Kan Huit, and the consultants, and I'll spell it because I don't want you to incur a fine. It just doesn't get any stranger because the consultant's name is A-U, capital A-U, next name F-O-O-K, and the third part of his name is Y-E-W. So it's F-O-O-K-Y-E-W. It's just amazing. It's almost like a comic strip up here.
He's part of a family.
he's part of a family, is right.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, good. Doing? Congratulations on your, within 72 hours, you'll be 50 years old.
Well, you know, it's not my 50th birthday.
No, I know.
But I think 50th birthdays are, you know, like it sort of creeps up on you. So you realize that...
Crept up on me.
You know, you've survived almost as long as most people, you know. And there isn't a format in New York City, not even the classical format, WQXR, that is has lasted as long as the whatever our format is here at WBAI.
Yeah, that's right.
Our listener sponsor.
Well, many others have come and gone.
That's right. That's right. And many listeners have come and gone.
And a lot have hung on. A lot have hung on. I've always listened whenever I could get the signal over the air.
Well,
I'm happy to be in a high enough spot where I can still pick you up. But
well, it's hard to describe just how unusual WBAI is in this New York City media market, and I think there are a lot of stations that would like to be like your station, WJFF, but the people who work at them are kind of the victims of the sales department, you know.
Yes, I understand. Well, I think that we've kind of gone astray a bit. I think we have a bit of underwriting that I don't think is really necessary. I think it would be better if we were completely listener supported, but the population is a little sparser up here, and I don't know. The underwriters that we have are pretty good. So,
well, see, I don't think there's anything wrong with some person who has it giving it to you, but asking you to do something in return, even, I would say, even to respect them and to allow them to call and talk on the air is, like, beyond the pale.
No, exactly. They don't do that, and the underwriters are pre-recorded, but the hosts do have the option of reading the underwriting, and usually it's tailored to the program that's on at the present time. So it could be worse, but it could also be better, like anything else. I did have a suggestion though for when either your lease expires or when you get out of your lease. You know, the history of WJFF is pretty unique. Malcolm Brown had a bright idea of having a hydro-powered radio station because it was a little difficult getting signals from other stations at the location of WJFF, and he owned a house at the base of the dam of Lake Jefferson. And it took 3 or 4 years, but they got it together, and with some donations, and actually a lot of energy and sweat by volunteers. What happened is volunteers actually built the station from the ground up, including the foundation and the structure itself. So I was thinking for WBAI to look for a vacant lot somewhere, and actually you know, actually build your own station. I think it would be a great idea. It would be great for building relationships.
I can't remember the last time I saw a vacant lot in Manhattan that didn't have a building being torn down in it or another one being put up in it. Maybe things will change now that the housing bubble has collapsed. I don't know.
Yeah, but, well, it was just a thought. But
you know, Captain Kirk used to say, space is the final frontier. You know, in New York City and in most of the world, people think they own something called real estate, and they have the right to constantly appreciate it in value, charge you more and more and more and more and more to use it, and not have it depreciate or lose any. It's the only thing that doesn't depreciate. And as it becomes more and more scarce and more difficult for people to find a space for themselves, real estate has become more and more expensive. It's almost impossible to figure. I mean, that's why they built that. Maybe we should go and put our transmitter in Brunei, in that big, tall building. Why, you could see the curvature of the earth from it. I don't know whether you could see a relay tower or something, but
on the observation deck of the 124th floor. But you still couldn't see more than a mile or so because of the smog.
Uh-huh, but no, those microwaves will pierce smog.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, but I was referring more to pollution worldwide.
You mean even that far up, the air is filthy?
Yeah, it's, I guess it's a polluted area. There is it's a highly concentrated population there.
The only other time I can remember when there was a big architectural endeavor that didn't quite work out was Brasilia. Whatever happened to the town of Brasilia, which was like a designed town?
That's right. Is it still the capital of Brazil? I think it is.
I thought
the capital changed.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a while ago.
How has that city planning worked out, I wonder?
Where is that? Oh, in Brazil?
Brasilia, yeah. Yeah.
I haven't really heard much.
Didn't Terry Gilliam make a movie about it?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Great movie.
But speaking of movies and plays, I tried to get on when Judith was there. She was really animated and fresh tonight. She sounded great. I had an idea for a. I wanted to mention to her first of all that she should take a day trip up sometime to the Liberty Free Theater, and I was curious if she knew Paul Austin. He's the owner and director, and. And he's taught acting in New York and at several locations. I'm sure she probably ran into him at one point or another. But he puts on some pretty controversial plays. But my idea for her that I would have liked to run by her, and maybe I'll get her number from you. Wouldn't it be great if she... I mean, you know the story, and I hate to always address this gas drilling, but... I just can visualize scenes of water catching fire.
When you got problems with gas, you got to express it.
Well, it could be done.
Or you'll suffer great pain. No, it was one of the great horrors of our time, where we weren't just faced with having to trade blood for oil. We were going to have to trade the very water that we drank for energy, because someone was polluting a good portion of it and dumping it into the aquifer that served New York City. And the Department of Environmental Protection has just announced that they think it's a very bad idea. And it's really because of the work that you've been doing for a couple of years since I know you on this subject.
There have been hundreds, if not thousands, of people doing it. I've just been persistent as far as getting it on the air. But I've mentioned many times Damascus Citizens, that website, DamascusCitizens.org. And I just went to a meeting this evening of the Delaware River Basin Commission, and I hate to say that they're acting like they're defeated, and we can't let that happen. One of the good things that happened is our friend Barbara Arendelle, one of the founders of Damascus Citizens, found that long story short, she busted these guys who were going to dilute the frack water, that toxic frack water. It was diluted, and they have the okay of the DEP of Pennsylvania. It's different than the DEP of New York State. That is a statewide organization, agency rather. And they're allowed to dilute that toxic water and then dump it into the Delaware River. And just read a sentence or two. The DEP reversal was ignited by the objection of the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, who noticed the application in late November and alerted the Campaign for Clean Water and other organizations. And anyway, so they
can't
stopped.
Wait to go to a Delaware sushi bar.
Oh, my God. Well,
speaking of sushi bars, this is WBAI in New York City. I'm talking to Fred Pecora of WJFF in Grahamsville and Liberty, and we're also being heard on KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, as well as streaming on the www. As they call it in the trade, at the WBAI.org. Fred, excuse me for interrupting you.
Oh, no, it's fine. And you're also being carried on Time Warner Channel 591 with larger coverage than I had thought previously. So, I just picked up today's issue. It's the fresh issue that I've referred folks to of the River Reporter, which you can see at riverreporter.com. And one of the headlines on the front page is the DEC flooded with comments. There was a representative there from the DEC at the meeting I mentioned, and they've gotten 12,000 responses, both in writing and phone calls. And the representative that was there said that it was going to take them longer to get through these comments than they ever considered. So that buys us a little bit of time, or a little more time than we thought, to fight this. And then the Gas News at a Glance: Chesapeake sells shale assets to a French company. So now, the Hydrostat company of Norway has bought about 40% of the leases of, I think, Cabot Drilling, and now the French have bought, 2.25 billion dollars worth of leases. The big deal and the most obscene deal is ExxonMobil is cutting a deal to buy out some of these smaller companies, apparently because they can't pay their lawyers enough to fight this, and Exxon can. I heard it was $41 billion, but the paper says $30 billion. ExxonMobil Corporation said it can cancel its $30 billion acquisition of XTO Energy if U.S. lawmakers pass legislation making hydraulic fracturing illegal or commercially impracticable. So that means if they have to disclose the fact that they're using arsenic and mercury and lead and 276 other chemicals, if they have to tell us what they're poisoning us with, they won't do it. Simple as that. It doesn't get any weirder.
I hope not.
I certainly hope not also. But a there's a letter and an editorial by a Dr. Robert Shulman, MD, who read the editorial in the Times on January 2nd, and he said, "I'm a bit shocked that the reporting in the Times is not taking it a bit further. If fracking fluids will destroy the water for the watershed zone, what about outside the watershed zone? What about people in the farms, depend on well water, so and so?" But then his closing paragraph is, "Sullivan County and the Catskills as a whole have the potential to help heal the entire region by becoming an ecological show place, allowing the drilling."
Those things are going to show up in cow's milk.
Absolutely.
I mean, mother's milk.
Absolutely. I asked that question to the agricultural commissioner of New York State on a call-in show on another radio station. And I asked how these chemicals, if these chemicals would translate. Well, when I heard that 19 cows, after drinking some of the spilled fluid, died within a half an hour, my question to him was, how do we know how long we can drink the milk from a cow that has been, you know, mildly poisoned, you know, not to the degree that those were. I mean, naturally you can't drink the milk of a dead cow, or you probably shouldn't. But he admitted that even if a cow eats some, like, leeks or scallions or onions or something like that, he said you can absolutely taste it in the milk. So, there you go. You know, I hate to beat this to death. We do have a little more time to comment on this, but the comments now should go directly to Patterson and to the EPA, the federal EPA, who is taking a closer look at this. So that's my story. But other than my bad news, it's a wonderful, wonderful program tonight, Bob.
Well, Judith Molina is such an inspiration as a person and as an artist and as a perseverer that, you know, it's always an up for me when I can spend a little time with her. I'm glad you got that feeling, friend.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I do. Obviously, she has persevered, and she's got a great imagination, and that's why I wanted to run this scenario by her. I really think that could put on a great short play on this subject. And by the way, I got clips of Water Under Attack, which is now going to be renamed Gasland, and I have queued up some comments at the Senate committee on the gas drilling that are pretty interesting.
Well, we'll listen to a few. The quality will be sort of deteriorated, I'm sure. But why don't you just tell us what's being said and who's saying it?
Well, there are no titles for the people that are speaking. One was an engineer, and
let's let it go. I won't prejudge it. Right. So far, so good.
They made a faith-based leak to conclude that injecting toxin materials underground posed little or no threat.
This one part is a little muddled. After this, it's fine.
Make no mistake. This is a frontal assault on the integrity of not only your water system, but the entire nation.
If the natural gas industry's statements of what they would like to do are in any way accurate, then this is going to be the biggest environmental issue in the history of the state.
A couple in Colorado had their water well explode after fracturing activities began on the neighboring property. Afterwards, they could light their water on fire because of the high levels of methane in the water.
But you ask the industry and they'll say, water don't burn. That water does.
Just outside of Fort Worth, there was a gas well that exploded, and it leveled and burned 1 square mile.
every environmental law we wrote to protect public health is ignored.
I'm trying to, you know, keep myself composed, but speaking as a geologist, as an environmental scientist, as a policymaker, this is insanity.
Was that
that was quite good.
Good.
Thank you, Fred.
Oh, sure. That's from, well, Josh has this, Josh Fox, who's been on your air last year, maybe 6 months ago, has entered this in the Sundance Film Festival. I think he's out there now. And, actually, I'm not supposed to show clips of the film while the judging is going on, but the judging should be over soon. But I think a little bit of audio was okay. But the finished film will be called Gasland. And, it's going to be spectacular. I hope he wins first prize.
Gasland.
Coming to a neighborhood theater near you. I'm sure it will be playing in Manhattan, actually.
I hope you can stay warm tonight, Fred.
We're having a warm spell. It's probably around 30 degrees.
Oh.
but brace for the weekend. It is going to turn colder this weekend. So anyway, happy 50th. Let me make room for something else.
Take care.
Bye.
You're on the air.
Hey, Bob.
Hi there.
Hold on, let me take you off speakerphone. Hey, man. Oh, it's so good to hear Fred. Man, this is George out here in Natick, Michigan. Wishing you well. And
well, you used to be a New Yorker, George.
I still am. I am. People come up to me, "You got an accent?" I said, "No, I don't."
Do you remember the early days of WBAI?
Yeah, you were the first thing I actually heard on the radio, because it was you at the convention with Abby Hoffman, and you were talking to Abby on the air, and I was listening to it. I just was scanning a radio, and I was like a little kid, and I said, "Oh my God. He just said the F word." He dropped the F bomb because he says you walk around with the word F on your head. And I said, "What in the blazes am I listening to?" And I don't think I switched away yet, I think.
Come on, tell me the truth. Did you really say blazes?
No, that's the current vernacular. You know, I probably said, "What the F word?" Like my son says the F word. He doesn't say the word. He just says, "And the F word." am I still on the air?
Well, you are, Ibrahim Gonzalez is about to be.
Ibrahim.
Here.
All right, well,
he'll
I just want to say, thank God.
In the moment, and I thank you for calling. What's the weather like where you are?
It's, I got about 6 inches of snow, and it's still coming down. Thank God. I thought it was global warming was setting in, because this is the weakest winter I've felt since I've been here.
And does Lake Michigan water taste like cherry wine?
Yeah, man, with the fringe on top.
Yeah.
Well, listen, say hi to Billy, everybody. And
all right, there's not a whole lot.
A thousand blessings to you and lots of power, man.
There's not a lot of clean water left out there, is there?
Actually, thank God, the lakes are still okay. I mean, you can't bloody well drink it, but, you could probably purify it to drink it. there's a lot of things we need to do. We need to change the way parking lots are built so that the water goes into the ground and goes back into the groundwater and not through the sewage system. And this is all, money we could have been spending on instead of, blowing up people in different countries.
You're always complaining.
I know.
Take care, George.
All right, bud.
Keep
Bye.
In touch. Bye. And you're on the radio.
Yeah, listen, Bob, I thank you for giving me opportunity to speak with Judith Molina and
the crew. I think, I don't know if you know, Bill Weinberg had a nice program with Judith and all.
Yes, I do.
It was a really good. They had a lot of chanting on the program from the anarchists like Molina and all. Mm-hmm. You know, and hello? Hello?
Is that your chant, Monroe?
Oh, no. I'm talking about Judith. The anarchists had a lot of chanting on free us and give us money and all those kinds of things, and money is no good. And it's a wonderful thing that they do, but they never quite define anarchy. And
anarchy is not getting up and disturbing a funeral, Monroe. Anarchy is not getting up and disturbing a funeral.
Huh?
Anarchy is not getting up and disturbing a wake.
That's
anarchy is not what you do. What you do is
chaos.
Is chaos.
Spoke to him very decently.
Yep. And you're on the air.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Hello?
Have a birthday to me.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, my selfish.
Hey.
Happy 71st birthday to me.
Well,
thank you very much. Is this Bob Fast?
No, is this Elvis?
This is Elvis, Bob. How you doing, man?
All right. Well, no one has heard from you for such a long time.
You know, man,
how are things down at the Heartbreak Hotel?
You know what? I'm out here in Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas, Nevada, Bob. I'm calling you from the beautiful Las Vegas. I'm making my comeback later on tonight.
Oh.
My 75th birthday. I'm coming out of retirement.
Well, I hope you have all the marshmallows and peanut butter you need.
Peanut butter banana, man. Try peanut butter banana.
And whatever else keeps your boat afloat.
Mashed potatoes and gravy. Lots of mashed potatoes, lots of gravy, man.
You sound like you're in pretty good voice. You wanna belt out a chord or two?
I got one for you, Bob.
Sure.
This is a song I learned from a band, the Young Wombats. I'm going to be sitting in with them tomorrow night, actually.
Wombats.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
So anyway, there's a song I learned from them. They call it, and it ties into earlier in your show, you were talking with the Lemon Theater and the anarchists about money, and this song is called Can't Buy Me Lemon Two Times.
Let's hear it.
I'll buy you a diamond ring, my friend, it will make you feel all right. I'll get you anything, my friend, it will make you feel all right. But I don't care too much for money, money can't buy me love. I don't care for money, money can't buy me love.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, there's more verses too, but I gotta stay. I gotta get my beauty sleep and get my voice ready. It's actually already Friday here out in Las Vegas. You know, there's a 3-hour time difference. I missed the first hour and a half of your show, Bob.
Who else is on the bill with you? Are you like the only doing the show by yourself or?
Like I said, I'm sitting in on a gig with this band called the Young Wombats. They're doing a show out here.
Uh-huh.
I can put the guy on. I'm here in his room. If you want to talk to him, he can explain more if you want.
Well,
but anyway, I'm sitting in with them. I'm going to be coming out and do a set. It's a big surprise. I'm unbilled. And not like I said, Elvis's comeback right now. It's like, you know, surreptitiously, you know, like. We're under the radar here, but we'll get a big buzz out of it, and then, you know, everybody will know. The king is back. Long live the king.
Well, they say what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
This guy, Dennis, told me, he said, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, except for that sexually transmitted disease that you take home with you when you leave. I don't know if that's true or not.
Oh, Elvis. Tell us about how you shook hands with Richard Nixon.
Oh man, that was great! You ever see that photograph of me? That's one of my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, I gotta tell you, man, I was so out of it. I was on like blue Quaaludes or whatever. I was really higher than a kite when I posed for that. I was ripped, and he made an officer. He gave me like a badge.
Your drugs are his.
Oh, they were all mine, man. Why did he have some? I don't know. If he wasn't sharing it. If Richard Milhouse had some drugs, he wasn't.
He was Bogarting them.
Milltown.
Oh, yeah.
What? Yeah. Is that Bill Prop out here back there?
That's right.
Bill Prop.
Elvis.
Bill, unpaid Bill.
Hey, Elvis.
How you doing, Bill?
That's it. All right. Thank you.
So Bill, Bob, you know, Bill, he made, I listened to your program. I listened on the internet. I was actually living out in Michigan. And, well, now the secret's out. But, Bill met Marilyn Monroe, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's true, yeah.
I got movies to prove it.
I don't think.
I was going to say, he's got film.
I don't think she did herself in over him,
yeah.
but there's some people
it was before
do.
Before the Kennedys, actually. Yeah. I met her. Mm-hmm.
All right, Bob, well, you got the exclusive. Elvis is back. The king is back. It's a private affair that we're doing out here, though. It's, you know, it's all sold out. Otherwise, I'd invite you.
Well, that's the thing that's getting harder and harder for the celebrities to do, keep their affairs private.
Yeah, how about it, man? Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yep.
I mean, you know, we'll talk later. We'll talk later. I'll come and I'll do a benefit for WPAI. Man, you should be able to make a little bit of change for the station.
Well, that's really good of you. Thank you.
Tune in on Sunday.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Sunday. You guys are doing a big, like, 50th anniversary or something like that?
That's right.
Sunday.
Mm-hmm. All day? I don't know if you promoted. You know,
I think it's starting at 11 in the morning and going on until after the old radio station sunsets.
Wow. And are you doing it from
the never sets on the old radio?
Yep.
Are you doing it at 120 Wall Street, or are you doing that out on a location somewhere?
Both.
I think 120 Wall Street is where it's going to happen.
And are you doing like part of some? Are you doing like a segment of Radio Unnameable, my favorite radio program in the whole wide world?
Well, call it what you will. I'm going to be on the radio in the afternoon. I'll be in the control room, and Steve Post and Julius Lester and Larry Josephson. Who else
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI.
That's right.
That's right. Is there anything good on the radio in Las Vegas?
I'm sure there is. I'll be honest with you, sir. I haven't had the opportunity to tune in. I've been in meetings and getting, you know, itinerary ready. And, yeah, this was, you know.
What are you wearing?
Oh, I'll be wearing my classic or my Las Vegas jumpsuit.
Uh-huh.
My white jumpsuit with my big belt and my, you know, I'll be sparkling. I'll be shining.
Oh, what's the name of that famous costume designer?
Bob Mackie?
No.
The guy who was shot to death?
No.
What was that?
Not Versace.
Hey, the bass player just, Bob, the bass player just showed up. The band is going to be playing bass with us tomorrow night. Craig Douglas Leach. Oh, just flew in from New Jersey, and he says, boy, his arm's tired.
Well, so that certainly is funny. Yes, and like the other classic line about Las Vegas is, you know how to make money in Las Vegas? I'll tell you how to make money in Las Vegas. When you get off the plane, you back into the propeller. That's how you make money.
That sounds like a Paul Krasner line, is it?
No, Lenny Bruce.
They're close enough for rock and roll, as they say in showbiz.
Well, it's a pretty important difference. One of them is alive.
Amen. Amen to that.
All right.
Gentlemen, listen. It was great. I'm a privilege and an honor to be talking to you gentlemen on the air. And,
great to talk to you, Your Highness. And keep that peanut butter rolling.
And send my regards to Wayne Newton.
Keep that.
I'll do that.
Keep
I'll
that
do that
for flying, and we'll hear from you sooner or later.
Amen, brother. I'll see you soon, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Now, on this one, I just can't hit the high notes, but I got to sing it. It's an appropriate song. The song was written back in 1967, which is, back in 1967, a few of us declared the war over. The idea originated with Allen Ginsberg from a poem I had a conversation with a guy named John Carpenter in L.A. We thought, why don't since the government wouldn't declare the war over, why don't we the people declare the war over? So we did that in L.A. in 67. Then we did it here in Washington Square Park in 67. Like I said, I can't hit those high notes, but I'll try it. Silent soldiers on a silver screen, framed in fantasies and drugged in dreams, unpaid actors of the mystery. The mad director knows that freedom will not make you free. And what's this got to do with me? I declare the war is over. It's over. It's over. Drums are drizzling on a grain of sand. Fading rhythms of a fading land. Prove your courage in the proud parade. Trust your leaders where mistakes are almost never made. And they're afraid that I'm afraid. I'm afraid the war is over. It's over. It's over. So do your duty, boys, and join with pride. Serve your country in her suicide. Find a flag so you can wave goodbye. But just before the end, even treason might be worth a try. This country is too young to die. I declare the war is over. It's over. It's over. One-legged veterans will greet the dawn, and their whistling marches as they mow the lawn. And the gargoyles only grin and greet. The gypsy fortune teller told me that we've been deceived. You only are what you believe. I believe the war is over. It's over. It's over.
Thank you.
Me, but I'm a good man,
but I'm a poor man, you can understand. All the doctors and nurses too, they came and they asked me, who in the world are you? I said, I'm the good man, but I'm the poor man, you can understand. The doctors and nurses, they shaking their head, said, take this poor man and put him to bed, because he's a good man. We know he's a poor man, we can understand. I didn't go hungry, I had a plenty to eat, I had good treatment and a place to sleep, because I was a good man. They knew I was a poor man, they could understand. I met a little dame, so she promised me that she would love me and always be sweet. She found out I was a poor man, but I was a good man. She couldn't understand. Now when she left me, she got in the door, she waved me goodbye, I haven't seen her no more. She found out I was a good man, she knew I was a poor man, she couldn't understand. The doctors and nurses, they shaking my hand, say, you